For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all of those joining us live somewhere on the interweb, good morning to you as well, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I am your guest host, temporary host, occasional host, Dave Minuke. Over in the corner to my right, maybe you're looking at him to the left, is my boy Ezra Ginsberg. And we have 2 hours of a jam-packed show to talk about the last 2 days in Montreal, Ezzy, the Winnipeg Jets in general. There's, you know, things didn't just end. It didn't mean like you did the drafting. Now you don't have to do anything else. There's a lot of stuff going on with this Winnipeg Jets club. We're going to be joined by our buddy Jim Toth in about 15 minutes to talk about the draft in Montreal. So let's just start with the way the draft went, Ezzy. And what were your overall impressions before we get into the specific picks made by the Jets?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I like the most each year about the draft, and I know, Dave, you like this about the draft every year, is that you get to know, you get to find out about players that you really knew nothing about prior, aside from the first round picks, right? Like we know, let's say, you know, a lot about the top 40, top 50. I mean, we're stretching it if we're getting into, you know, top 60, top 70. But I think when you're talking about some of those players, like, Garrett Brown, for example, like I knew nothing about Garrett Brown. And then it turns out that he played U13 hockey with Rutger McGroarty, right? So I just love, you know, personally getting to know, some of those kind of mid-level prospects. And, you know, we'll get into, you know, Rutger McGroarty and Brad Lambert and everything like that. But it was a very interesting draft for the Jets, right? Like they took their goalie in the later round. Usually it's the sixth round, but they took their goalie in the seventh round this year. And when you consider, you know, that the Jets, a lot of these picks were from trades, right? Because the Jets had traded away, of course, some of their picks. But it's really interesting. It's a bit of a mixed bag, right? Like a goaltender, some defensemen. Is it one defenseman or two defensemen? Two defensemen, right? And then, you know, forward. So is it one or two?
Well, now I'm questioning. I mean, it was Garrett Brown's a defenseman. S.A. Salmonson is a defenseman. And then I feel like there's one more defenseman that you're missing. Wagner's a forward. No, it's two.
Yeah, it's two defensemen. There you go.
Two defensemen. Yeah.
Yeah. So two defensemen, four forwards, and a goaltender. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag. And you know, when I look at Danny Zilkin, like to me, that's probably, and I'm getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here, Dave, because I imagine we're going to start off with McGroarty and Lambert here. But Danny Zilkin is really interesting to me, right? Like, we've talked about it year after year. Mark Hillier and his amateur scouting staff seem to find players that fall a little bit in their draft year. And if you look at Zilkin, he was supposed to be a first-round pick at the beginning of the year, right? And this is a guy that was a top player for the Guelph Storm. Lots of talent. I mentioned it on Twitter, and you retweeted it, Dave. Like, he's originally born in Russia, but he's actually Canadian. He's represented Canada multiple times at the U17s and the U18s. And a lot of skill. So it's always interesting when you see those guys kind of similar to Nikita Chibrikov, right? And Dmitry Reshevsky, guys that, or you've talked about Henry Nikkanen, Dave, like guys that have, you know, that were supposed to be first round, second round picks that have fallen off a little bit. So Zilkin was a really interesting one. The more I read about him and the more highlights I watched, I really got intrigued by him. But obviously, you know, Rutger McGroarty and Brad Lambert, the Jets' two first rounders, those are the two players that, you know, Jets fans, I think, are the most excited about. And I think there's a lot of reasons to be, you know, excited about these guys because it's all about skill, right? Like McGroarty, of course, is considered more of a power forward, but he's a guy that scored 50 goals, for the U.S. National Development Program when you combine all of his goals over the course of the 21-22 season. And then Brad Lambert, obviously, you know, he fell big time after being considered a kind of a surefire top five pick at the beginning of the year. So it was a really interesting draft year, for the Jets. And it's going to be really interesting to, you know, see these guys develop.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, Ez, because someone tweeted at us late yesterday saying that the Jets had, I think, four of the top, like, you know, seven picks from, you know, 8 months ago or something, or like maybe it was it was ahead of the 22-23 season or 21-22 season. So it was a long time ago, but the Jets had a lot of guys who were very highly regarded and they fell. But you know what? It's like the comments made by Mark Hillier, the Jets director of amateur scouting. He said to Brad Lambert, and they acknowledged it, you didn't have a good season last year in Liga. And let me tell you something. We talked about it with Chris Peters last week, Ezzy, and then we asked him. I said, Chris, you know, and this is before we even knew the Jets were going to draft Brad Lambert, but we just said, what is the likelihood of him playing in Seattle? Because that's where his rights were traded from, Saskatoon in the WHL. And I said, you know, to Chris, I said, what's the likelihood? His thought process was he's likely going to play in Liga without, even though he didn't have a contract for next year. But he said that the team is going to have a lot to say about it. Well, when Mark Hillier spoke yesterday, and he was asked that question by, I think, Weaver, the response was clearly, we want him to play. We're hopeful that he'll be playing in Seattle, playing that WHL-style scheduled style of game and getting their guys, like I said, Mike Keane and Jimmy Roy, down to Seattle quite a bit. They'll be able to see, you know, all of these guys. I mean, imagine if Chaz Lucius is playing in Portland, right? Like, you're going to be able to do quite the West Coast trip for Jets prospects. So just to watch them, help them develop, help them become professionals and or grow into that next stage.
Well, of their careers. We talked about that Thursday night, right, Dave? Like, after the Jets took Lambert 30th overall, I brought that up. Like, you know, what are the chances that he's going to play in the WHL? And we kind of speculated a little bit. And I always like to listen. First off, I always like to listen to Mark Hillier after the draft, because you know that he is going to take so much pride in each Jets draft pick. And he's going to give you insight from a guy who's watched all of these players, or at the very least watched most of the players. Right. So, yeah, I thought that was really interesting. It wasn't definitive. Right. Like, we don't know if Lambert's going to stay in Finland or if he's going to stay in the WHL. And I think, you know, either way, Dave, like, wherever he ends up playing, I mean, this guy's going to find his way to the pro game. Like, whether that's, you know, starting with the Jets or starting with the Moose, probably makes more sense that he, you know, gets a little seasoning in the American Hockey League. But I think there's something to be said for playing for not just, you know, a good team, but like a top team in the WHL. You know, we talked about like a guy like Kevin Korchinski, who was also taken, you know, in the first round. Like, the Thunderbirds are a powerhouse. And that was the kind of knock on Lambert, right? I'm not sure how his team did last year, but I know that it was the Pelicans was his first team, right? And I don't think they had a very good team. So that was kind of the knock on Lambert, was that he didn't take that next step. Well, he wasn't playing on a very good team. I don't know enough about, you know, his teammates to know, you know, who was good and who wasn't good. But I think that Lambert, there's a good chance that he'll play for Seattle. But according to Mark Hillier, who would know better than anybody, it seems like he's still considering playing in Finland. But regardless, I mean, the Jets got a top five talent at number 30.
Yeah, and you know, for anybody who's curious, there's a really good breakdown of Brad Lambert's game by prospect at Prospect Expert. I actually posted it on illegalcurve.com. You can go in the Brad Lambert post on his, which includes his media availability and all that stuff from Saturday, and you'll be able to watch it. It's actually about 25 minutes, but it kind of breaks down his game, how he played over in Finland last year. So really interesting stuff. Well, as you and I have touched on it a little bit, we've given it kind of a little overview. We're going to have a lot more to talk about, but I can't keep this man waiting. There's only so long you keep Jim Toth waiting. So I'm going to bring Jim Toth into the chat, and he's going to talk to us. So we're going to welcome Jim Toth.
Gets the worm, JT.
That's right. So Jimmy Toth of CJOB 680. How are you doing this morning?
I'm well, gentlemen. How are you? Can you hear me? Is this thing on?
It is on. We can hear you. You're looking
crystal
good.
Clear, my man.
And we have Jimmy. It's good thing you came on, because the truth is, there is a lot to talk about. The Jets, the Jets restocked the cupboard in Montreal. They were focused on, and it's funny. Like, I tweeted it, and we're going to talk about it. But they finally filled out that right side of the D, right? Salmon and Brown. That's what they needed to do to kind of get those guys in there, because they're going to lose Kovacevic most likely to the Jets. So he's graduating as a prospect. The 2017s, Leon Gavanke graduating in theory could still be with the Moose, but that idea of those guys graduating. You're restocking me now with a couple of new prospects. So just maybe to start the show, just as Ezzy and I just talked about, what were your overall impressions of what the Jets did in Montreal?
Well, my first overall impression was I think that they thought, excuse me, guys. I thought they did okay. Like, they did well with their picks. I think that Chicago took their pick, to be honest with you. That's what it looked like to me at the table. And I thought it was a draft for the first time in a long time where they just weren't taking talent. And I'm not talking about the Jets, but the NHL. It reminded me a lot of an NFL draft where NFL teams, if there's six really good quarterbacks in the top 10, and the number one overall pick could be a right tackle. It just depends what you need on that team. And to me, it seemed like that's what the NHL draft was this year, which normally it's just like Shane Wright wouldn't have gone at four in a normal draft. I don't think that I just think that teams picked what they needed. New Jersey wanted the D-man. Montreal like Shane Wright, I'm sure. I think everybody does, but they need scoring. And I think the Slovakian kid is going to score more. And then, you know, Ron Francis, what does he need? Does he need a scorer? No, he needs 200-foot hockey players until this team gets some elite talent and skill in Seattle. So I thought that's how it fell through. I think they had their eye on Connor Geeky, and I think they had their eye on the center. Oh, he escapes my name.
Frank Nazar.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Nazar. It is early. and I think they really were going to go with Nazar until Chicago picked him at 13. And then I liked what Chicago did to get the 13th pick. And I liked what Montreal did to get more picks. So it was a way more exciting draft in my mind than we've seen in the past years. And then I think what happened with the Jets is they just took the guy that was, you know, probably in their top three, top five, and then fell to them. I think the other options weren't there. So that's how a draft works. You make your list and you go with it. The Brad Lambert thing, I literally was saying, right when their pick was coming up, when he was still there, I go, I wonder if the Jets take a gamble on Brad Lambert here. And of course they did. And I think it's a good gamble. You at the 30th pick. I think that's a great gamble. I don't think he's not going to pan out. And I know the season he's had, and I've done some reading on it, how it went. Obviously he was a 17-year-old kid playing with men. I do think he needs to go to the Western Hockey League in Seattle. They got a great program there. They got a great team. They're going to vie for the championship again. So I'd like to see that, but I do think that he is going to play in the National Hockey League. I don't think the gamble is here is he ever going to make it or not? And I think the gamble is, what is he going to be when he gets there? Is he just going to be a guy that should score? And we've seen a lot of them in Christian Vesalainen and Alexander Burmistrov. And I'm not comparing him to either of those. I'm just saying the trajectory of their career. So I like the gamble on Brad Lambert. If it pays off, he's going to be a dynamic, skilled forward for this team. And if it doesn't pay off, I think he's going to be one of those guys that, you know, plays on a third line. And if he can't check, he won't be around long. So, and then you go through the rest of it. They got centers, they got D, and they always pick up a goalie, which they did again. So nothing spectacular, nothing shocked me, other than all the stuff that was going on at the draft. But concerning the Jets, I just thought they did what they do and picked some really good hockey players. I like the third round pick. Like he sounds like he's going to make it. And those are the things that I look for. With the Jets is their first round picks normally pan out. I think it's like an 80 or 90% thing. Second round picks usually play. They find some diamond in the roughs in the 3 to 5 round. And the third round pick, I really like, I think he has something to offer. So I thought overall it was a good draft for them.
Yeah. Danny Jilkin at third round, right before you popped on, Jim. I really like that pick as well, because if you look at, and there's kind of a theme here, right? And we talk about it every year. It was a little bit different in terms of, you know, Rucker McGroarty went a little bit higher, but as you know, I mean, these rankings, they don't really mean much. Like, nobody's going to talk about the rankings. Everybody's going to talk about where these players were drafted. But Danny Zilkin, you know, I was looking back in the fall of 2021, he was considered kind of like a surefire first rounder, and they got him in the third round. And he's, of course, Canadian, even though he was born in Russia. So the question I wanted to ask you was, and it's maybe, you know, it's not easy to answer because it's almost like getting in the head of Mark Hillier and the Jets amateur scouting staff. But do you see this team maybe taking, you know, some more risks, like not just Brad Lambert, but just kind of in general, considering that we know that the Jets' strength, that the prospect cupboard is much stronger on defense, right? Like, we know that the Jets are going to lose some players. I mean, could be Blake Wheeler, you know, as early as today. Like, it could happen very soon. But
yeah,
I mean, you're talking about, you know, Mark Scheifele could walk in a couple of years, right? Like, this team, the core of this team is changing. Do you kind of maybe get that as a sense that as a theme this year, that maybe in addition to Brad Lambert, the Jets were maybe willing to think a little bit more outside the box in terms of, you know, the type of player they drafted?
I do. And I also think it's where they're at. Like, they're at that witching hour point over the next 2 years where we heard, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois is going to free agency. It might mean he doesn't want to play here, and it might mean that he just wants to keep his options open, which is, I think, what he's doing right now. Scheifele's contract's going to be up, and whether he stays or not, it's going to be big. Like, Mark Scheifele's not going to sit here at 29 years old, I think, or 30 years old, and say, okay, I'll take $6 million and want to stay a Jet. Mark Scheifele's going to say, I want, you know, if he continues the way he is, I'm a point of game player for 8 seasons now is what it will be. And I want $10 million. So I don't see that fitting in anymore as well. So I do think they're going to be more adventurous around the team. I think the core is changing. Like, the core will be changed. And that's what happens. 30 is old in the National Hockey League. And I know people are going to say, look at Blake Wheeler, but there are exceptions. Like, guys can still contribute and stuff. But the average career in the National Hockey League is, I think, 4.5, 5 years. So when you have your core like this, I do think they're going to be dynamic. But I always go back, guys. We talked about this a couple of times when I've been on. People still live in the past. People still, like the Seinfeld, you're living in the past, man, talking about Bozo the Clown. Like, Kevin Cheveldayoff has been the most active GM prior to last season in the previous 18 months. He traded a dynamic winger to get a dynamic center. He'd made 2 trades in the offseason to bring in top 4 D-men. Now, we can debate all we want how it worked out, but no GM has been more active in the past 2 years than Kevin Cheveldayoff. He's, as you guys were referencing at the start of the show, he's going to have to be even more active this summer, and yet people still think about the first 3 to 4 years of this team in Winnipeg and how he never made any dynamic moves. I think those days are over, and that's what happens. This is the trajectory of this lineup after 11 years. It's been drafted well. It's been built well. It does not need a rebuild. The team is in a situation now where hopefully they never have to rebuild. They just continue to tinker, but the tinkering has gotten to the point where it's big now. It's big names. It's big moves.
You know, and Jimmy, one of the players that they didn't really have to do if they would have handled it properly was Eric Comrie, right? Eric Comrie could have been a restricted free agent, but he didn't play enough games, enough minutes. He just needed 3 games, 30 minutes per game, I think it was, roughly, to prevent him from becoming a Group 6 free agent. And one of the things that I think got overlooked on Monday when Rick Bowness was introduced as head coach was the fact that one of the things he said to Sarah Leske on TSN was the idea that they've already offered Eric Comrie. They were trying to get him signed. That's what he said. He said Kevin Cheveldayoff is trying to get him signed. And then Weber yesterday in his article, mostly about the draft, but did say towards the end that the Jets have offered Eric Comrie a contract. It looks like he might go to free agency to see what the offers are going to be before he circles back to Winnipeg. But I mean, you know, what do you think? What is your philosophy on Eric Comrie? Do you think that obviously it looks like a mistake now in hindsight, but how do you think that ends up playing out?
Well, first of all, I don't know about playing him 3 more games. There was never a time this season where the Jets were comfortably in a playoff spot other than when they were 9-3-3. Connor Hellebuck, as we all know, regardless of what he wants, but he wants to play a lot, needs to play a lot in order to be Vezina caliber Connor Hellebuck. So I don't, in January, February, March, say, well, I've got to get Eric Comrie 2 starts in the next 4 games. You're fighting for your playoff life. And I know they were, I think the worst that they were out of it was the last week of the season when it was 10 points or more. So I don't sit there as a GM and go down to my coach and say, I know we're 6 points out of a playoff spot, but I need you to play Eric Comrie 3 more games over the next 8. I don't do that to my coach. I tell my coach, you need to get in the playoffs and you need to play your best lineup. So I don't think it's as easy as everybody thinks it was. And I don't plan my strategy that way. Would it have been great if they had? Yes. Would have been nice if maybe the last 3 games of the regular season, they said they're Eric Comrie's. Yes. But then what is Connor Hellebuck doing? Wait a minute. Are we trying to win here? I have some pride. So I don't know those conversations. What I do know is what you guys know. Eric Comrie is a phenomenal individual, and Eric Comrie loves the Winnipeg Jets organization. He adores the Jets organization. Eric Comrie is also getting up into his late 20s where he needs to make money. So I don't blame him for going for free agency, and I don't doubt that some teams are going to take a run at him. But I think the Jets probably offered him an increase, a fair contract, and they need to come in. The other side of this, though, is, gentlemen, if another team in free agency offers him $2.5, $3 million, The Jets can't do that. If the Jets could do that, they would have kept Laurent Brossoit, and Eric Comrie never would have came back to this. So I wonder if people think that way. I wonder if people go, you have to keep him. And even as an RFA, you'd have to give him 10%. He doesn't have to accept that. He could ask for a trade. He can move then. So it's not as easy as just playing him three more games and then he's going to sign a team-friendly contract again because he's an RFA. He might sit here and go, look, I'm at this age. I had a great season. I need this. I need $2 million a year. And so that's how I look at it. I think the Jets have a very good chance to re-sign Eric Comrie. But whether he does or not, I'm not sure. And if he doesn't, I think it's because he's going to get about $1.75, $2 million a year or more. And the Jets can't do that. And that's just the issue they're in. If they're in a situation like Detroit, who now has two goaltenders that can both start and are all making under $7 million, awesome. But Connor Hellebuck's here, and he makes $6 million a year. You can't start paying a tandem $9 million. You just can't in this cap world. So I think Eric Comrie is one of those guys that they're going to try to resign. They're going to offer him a deal. I think, to be honest with you, if Eric Comrie has 1.5 sitting on the table and somebody offers him 1.75, he might stay. But I also think that if it gets up to two and it's 500 grand more a year, that he takes it. And he's also going to look, guys, to be honest with you, at his age and the season he's had, he wants to play. Mm-hmm. What guy doesn't? So if another team comes in and goes, here's $2 million a year, they're only offering you 1.5. But this is, and I don't know what it is. If it's Philadelphia and we got Carter Hart here, he might look at that and go, I have a real chance of taking this team over. And how can you begrudge him from that? So to worry about the three games just to get a little more control, maybe if I'm in a playoff spot by 7 points, I give him an extra game or two and see how it goes if he gets us some wins. But, and I think he had a really good season, but I do think it's time for Eric Comrie to spread his wings and try to get more playing time and get more money. So that's just how I feel about the situation. He might be back and he might not. And if he's not, I don't blame him one bit. And I don't blame the Jets either. That's what happens when guys need increases. Eric Comrie's not the only guy in this team that's going to leave because he's going to get more money.
Yeah, no doubt, Jim. And I think you make a lot of good points. I mean, we've had Eric Comrie on the show a bunch of times. I know that, you know, you've talked to him and had him on. I'm not sure if you had him on your show, but I know that you've had interactions with him over the years. And you're right. Nobody has anything bad to say about him. And you're right. He loves playing here. But I think it will come down to ultimately, look, it's a moot point about the RFA games played status at this point, right? That was months ago. I mean, we got to move on. As you said, we can't live in the past here. I mean, he is where he is right now. I think, you know, it's kind of 50-50 right now if he stays, because as you mentioned, Jim, he could get more money from another team and he deserves it, right? Like, he had a phenomenal season. I just personally hope, and I think a lot of Jets fans hope, that he stays just because he's a fan favorite, right? He's turned into a fan favorite that I think fits in nicely. It's kind of like the old kind of Marty Brodeur, Chris Terreri situation, right? Where you know that your number one goalie is going to play 60 to 65 games and the backup's going to get, you know, 15 to 17 or whatever, right? So it works out well, but you make a good point when you say, you know, Comrie wants to play more. No goalie at the NHL level wants to play less. So maybe that factors in, but we don't know what happened with the, you know, the games played at the end of the season. I thought he should have played more last year, but it's easy for me to say that, right, Jim, because he put up such good numbers, right? What did he have, 10 or 11 wins? But I mean, at the end of the day, Hellebuck's your number one goalie and you want to ride him.
When I would have played him more is around February, when I knew that he had, you know, adjusted and become an NHL goalie. But the idea that I would play more in November, December, I was the one who said I would get him 4 or 5 games by the end of November, beginning of December. And if it doesn't look good, you got to make a trade. Because of this roster we had, like, we always have to think of the context of when the season was. So I wouldn't have played him more earlier in the season, because even when he played 2 or 3 games, I was like, well, those went well, but I'm not sold that Eric Comrie, we all know his struggles in the NHL prior to that. Then when it did go well and I trusted him personally and was like, he's going to be really good this year, it was February. And I don't know what you do in January, February, when you're fighting for your playoff life to go, and the message that sends. And then, as we heard at the end of the year, gentlemen, I think in that room, that's when things really started falling apart in February. And so do you really go, hey, Connor Hellebuck, you're going to sit more as we're fighting for the playoffs and this is going on? So I just, like, I'm with everybody else. It would be great if you still had his rights, RFA. I don't think on a week-to-week, 5-game increment schedule that I worry about that. I really don't in the season, and especially in a season that went as bad as it did. Like I said, if they're 9-3-3 and they continue that pace, I give him, there's no doubt in my mind he has three more games under him, but they weren't, and they had COVID and injuries and things were falling apart, and they, the expectations of this team being a top 10 team in the league and the roster and it not panning out, the last thing you're worrying about is who needs more time for RFA status.
I agree. And, you know, we got to get off Eric Carmi here just because, I mean, we have too many elephants in the room not to talk about Blake Wheeler and Pierre-Luc Dubois, Jim. So many rumblings prior to the draft. We all know when it started. Frank Saravalli dropped the Saravalli bomb and put him on the trade target board, not the trade bait board. And leading up, there was some speculation. Some people thought, you know, Blake Wheeler might be traded round one Thursday night, maybe even on Friday. And then it went really quiet. And it seems like, you know, right now, there's no indication that Wheeler's going to be traded imminently. But what's kind of your take on where we're at with that? Because I think everybody knows that there's a chance that Wheeler could be moved based on, you know, the fact that Cheveldayoff has been talking to other teams. But right now, it's very tough to really know when or if a trade is going to actually happen.
Well, I think we're going to start seeing things around free agency, guys. And as much as the draft was a different year than we're normally seeing, I think this free agency is different. The massive names that are out there. And what I mean by that is there's always one or two or three big fish. And then it sort of levels off and it wonders who's going to get a raise and who's willing to overpay or something like that. Not this year. If Johnny Gaudreau goes to market, if Evgeny Malkin goes to market, those are names that teams will sign even they don't have the draft picks or the cap space. They will do the Vegas. They will do, we'll worry about it later. And so when they get those players, then all of a sudden other players are going to have to move. And I don't mind this hot action we're going to see coming up, because that's what I would do as a GM. I would have my budget. I would have my limit. I'd have my players that I'm not moving. And then if I could get a Johnny Gaudreau or if I could get a Malkin, I would sign that immediately. And then I would worry about the roster and move some pieces elsewhere. So that's where I think Blake Wheeler comes in. Once the big fish goes, I think Blake Wheeler will get to a situation where he's going to probably play a second line role. It's probably going to be on a contender, and he's probably going to be moved. I think Blake Wheeler is going to go. I had Frank Saravalli on, luckily, the day he put that list out. It was a Stanley Cup final game that day, and he managed to give me 10 minutes on 680 CJOB. And he said, well, this came out of a mutual thing is from what he's hearing. And I understand that too. The one thing we rarely talk about when we talk about the prickliness and the in-your-faceness of Blake Wheeler is he looks like a guy who hasn't enjoyed playing hockey the last 3 years. There's always something going on. There's always something he's blaming himself for. Then he's upset that they're losing, which he takes to heart. And I don't think it's a bad thing. Like I'm at the forefront going as a captain. You have to be easier and more available to the media, and you have to be easier with them. I'm front and center with that. Blake needs to sort of let that cool a bit and understand and answer questions and do it and not take it personally. But that's just the way he's wired. He wants to win, and he kills him when he doesn't. And that was long before he was ever a captain of this team. But that being said, I just think he's a guy that hasn't enjoyed playing hockey anymore. I think there's the stuff going on in that room, and he knows he's responsible as captain, and he's trying to fix things in different ways. He admitted when Line A was traded that he wished he'd done some things differently. He had an off season where he said he took it home and with three kids and a wife, where it was bothering him. And he was, you know how it is when we take our work home with us and we're not nice. I just think he's a guy that when the team sat down with him and said, hey, Blake, this leadership thing needs to be fixed. And it's obviously a strain on you with you're spending a lot of your efforts trying to figure it out, make it go. And you don't seem very happy. And I'm just saying that's just what I think these conversations go like. And then Blake sits down, who desperately, and I don't care what anybody says, Blake Wheeler desperately wants to bring a Stanley Cup to Winnipeg and be a Jet until this offseason. And I think with all the things that were said, and his good buddy Paul Stastny was one of the guys who said it. So, you know, they're having conversations. And I bet you Paul and his family and even Cheveldayoff and maybe Mark Chipman sat down and said, look, it doesn't seem like you're happy and enjoying things. And he probably said, looked at himself and said, I'm not. And then the idea of going to another team where he's maybe not on the top line, but a second line with a chance to win and play out the 2 years of that contract seems like an okay option for a guy. And so I think that's what's going on. I do believe he's going to get moved. I know that there's a ton of teams interested in Mark Scheifele, but I don't think the return is there. So, and I think this now, guys, I think the Jets will not go into the season without two top centers. And right now, those two top centers are Dubois and Scheifele. The idea that they're going to trade Dubois to Montreal for the first overall pick does nothing for them over the next 2 years. The idea that they're going to get rid of Mark Scheifele and bring in some third line or second line winger, I don't think that happens. If there's a deal that could bring in, and I'm talking top five defensemen in this league, Mark Scheifele will be dealt. And you brought that up as a while ago, that maybe they do it for a bona fide top workhorse D-man. And I could see that. Or a guy that can at least play second line center and put up at least 65 points.
And that's, Mark Scheifele's here. Jacob Chychrun, by the way, for those that were thinking of that.
No,
we're talking, you know, top 10 defenseman, Jim. Just sorry, I wanted to mention that. I think Chychrun is a really good defenseman. I just don't see like a Scheifele for Chychrun straight up, as some people were suggesting. No. Even if his salary is attractive, I think he'd probably be like the third or fourth best defenseman on the Jets.
The one thing people have to remember is Evander Kane wanted to trade for 3 years. Jack Rossovic wanted to trade, and he'd probably still be here unless it wasn't going with Patrick Laine. Patrick Laine took Rossovic out of this team. He didn't go because he asked for a trade. Mark, they are patient, and I don't blame Kevin Cheveldea for that. The more conversations I've had around this, the Scheifele thing at the end of the year and the Wheeler with the hockey world, is that Cheveldea will not make his roster worse. And so if he can get something that'll make the team better, if he can get enough pieces that takes him in a defensive direction, he may do that. Or if he can get a second line center for first line center Mark Scheifele. But he's not going to just move Scheifele to move him unless it's, you know, next offseason. And I think the best time to move Mark Scheifele is this summer if you're going to move him. But if you can't get that return back, why are you moving him? Like, and I understand it. And I've been, when the season ended and I heard his comments, I'm like, he's got to go. But Paul Maurice was on our show about a week after he was hired in Florida. And he said, when you get those interviews the day after losing, it's raw. And it's people say things. And so, and then I started thinking about it. Mark Scheifele went home that night after Seattle, came back, or after Seattle, came out, and he's like, this sucks. We were supposed to be going to the Stanley Cup final this year. That's what we were supposed to be doing. And I'm not happy. And I'm not happy that some of these guys in the room are saying things to me. And I'm not happy that when I say things to the, you know, and so he's like, I got to think about my future. So I thought he had to go. I still think he probably has to, but Rick Bowness is here and we'll find out what it's going to be. But I'm sort of rambling on here, but I just, with all that included in it, and what I think, Kevin Cheveldea is not going to move him just to change Mark Scheifele off this team. He will move him if it makes his team better.
And Jim, and further to your point, and then I'll let Dave M get in here with a question, but that was before we found out that Pierre-Luc Dubois wanted to hit free agency in 2 years, right? So, I mean, that to me, that Dubois and Scheifele, they're related to your point. I mean, not only do you not want to lose one center, you don't want to lose your other, you know, top center. So I think that speaks to, you know, Scheifele not being moved. I mean, you know, it could always happen, but I think to your point earlier, it looks like a trade for trading Wheeler, it's imminent, it makes a lot more sense. And then maybe this time next year is when you trade Scheifele. There's still going to be a demand for Scheifele, maybe more so because he has 2 years left at around $6 million a year. But I agree with you. I mean, the day after those comments, everyone basically had Scheifele in another hockey jersey, right? And now it looks like it's that jersey is that other jersey is going to go to Blake Wheeler, right? So,
well, and I was told the day after those comments, or within 3 days after, there was 2021 teams who I'll take Mark Scheifele. But they all said, I'll take Mark Scheifele at this, which why wouldn't you? I mean, you guys know when there's blood in the water, the sharks circle, they try to get more than they can and give you less. And so, but it's interesting. Rick Bowness has told us, told Kelly Moore at the draft that he's talked to Blake. He's talked to Mark. They're in. We had Adam Lowry on, I want to say 2 or 3 weeks ago, because he was saying my July is shot because he had 3 weddings to go to. But he said, I'm going golfing with Scheife tomorrow. Like Mark was in Calgary and they were going to go golfing. And he said, I understand Mark's golf game is top notch. He's been golfing a lot and stuff. So and then Rick told Kelly Moore at the draft that he's had conversations. They're raring to go. Like they see the change and they're ready to go and be there. So I just think that like Winnipeg's tough. We all know that. And it's tough to keep players. I think Kevin Cheveldayoff, regardless of what you think of the job he's done, has the toughest GMing job going. Nobody wants to waive their no trade to come here except for Paul Stastny. And he came because Blake Wheeler's his good friend. And then you have this. You have these. This is the new NHL too, guys. Goudreau, Dubois. I look at it. I'm like, if I'm Dubois, I wouldn't sign either. And I hate to say that because, you know, you want him on the Jets. But why would he limit his options? In 2 years, he could still sign here. But signing now just eliminates him being able to look at his options. And I think that's guys who know they're going to get paid and guys who know they're going to have jobs are going to do this more and more. Auston Matthews did it, didn't sign one day past free agency in Toronto. Johnny Gaudreau did it. Steven Stamkos did this. People forget, but he was about a one signature away from being a Toronto Maple Leaf. And at the very end, he's like, I'm going to stick with Tampa. So guys of that
pretty good
ilk,
decision, right, Jim?
Yes, guys of that ilk are going to keep their options open. And that puts Kevin Cheveldayoff behind the eight ball. And let's remember, guys, I mean, so maybe he is trying to trade one of those two and get dynamic players back. And those dynamic players are sitting there going, I'm not going there. So I don't know.
Well, you know, the conversation continues. Kevin Cheveldayoff is always having conversations. If you're not having conversations, you need to be having conversations, Jimmy. And so we are having one with you right now, Jim Toth of 680 CJOB joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Oh, he's got a thought.
One final point is Mark Scheifele next year will be this year's JT Miller. What are the Canucks going to do with JT Miller? And same with Dubois. So, and I love everything about JT Miller. I think he's the kind of player that the Jets need. But what are they doing with him? He's got a very great contract. It's only a year left. If he won't sign an extension, like it happens, and it doesn't happen just here in Winnipeg is what I was trying to say. Sorry, Dave.
Before you get in, though, is it ridiculous to suggest Scheifele for JT Miller straight up?
I suggest like, that.
I don't think that that's a ridiculous – like, I realize this is crazy season where, like you said, Jim, like, people were talking Pierre-Luc Dubois for a first overall pick, even though first overall picks almost never – get traded. But to me, like, JT Miller for Mark Scheifele actually makes a lot of sense for both teams.
I floated this in February, and I floated it because JT Miller has become more than a point of game player in his time in Vancouver. And what the Jets need, and I know I'm bashing Mark here, and I don't feel bad, it's the truth, but they need a guy who will come over those boards and make a difference in the third period. A guy when they're down 3-2 will chew through chicken wire fence to get to the net and score a goal. A guy who would eat wood to get to the next step. And that's JT Miller. JT Miller is very good defensively. JT Miller, and I said, Mark Scheifele's got 2 years left. He's got 1 year left. Do the swap. And because the chance of the Jets re-signing either of them is, you know, what it is. But, I mean, JT Miller's another guy. Why would you limit your options? You might stay in Vancouver if they make some moves, but I just like everything about JT Miller, and I think the Jets need a little bit more of that. I think the Jets, Kyle Connor, Nick Ehlers, you know, Dubois like that. Dubois like JT Miller, and Mark is too. Mark likes to win and put up points and stuff, but I just don't see him, you know, coming over the boards and just making a difference on it. Not necessarily scoring, but just making a difference on a shift, putting three guys through the boards and going, guys, this is unacceptable. Some guys' nature aren't just like that. JT Miller is. So, but my point overall is Dubois, Scheifele, JT Miller. I mean, what do you think Calgary's sweating through with Gaudreau here? And what do you think Tampa Bay was sweating through with Steven Stamkos? Drafted, developed. He was in Toronto about to sign, and then they upped the offer. So,
well, and the craziest thing with the Flames, Jim, as you know, is that Matthew Tkachuk is due for a big time raise. I mean, he was making, you know, a decent amount of money before that, but like they're totally waiting on what's going to happen with Johnny Gaudreau before they decide what to do with Matthew Tkachuk. Right. Obviously you expect, I mean, if I'm Brad Tree Living, I'm giving Tkachuk, you know, a big contract. He's the face of your franchise, right? Like look at the season that he just had. We know how good he is. He's arguably a top 10 forward in the league. And then you throw in the fact that, you know, he's physical and agitator. He could drop the gloves every once in a while, right? So the situation in Calgary to me is fascinating because both of those guys are going to get paid. It's just not clear. Most likely they can't afford to keep both those guys.
Yeah. And like I said, they're the guys that they know they're going to have. Pierre-Luc Dubois, I know I'm going to have a job in 2 years. I know I'm going to get what I'm going to get. So why would I limit my options? Especially if, you know, this team continues to not play well or something. And it's not bashing the team. It's just the way it is. I mean, Calgary's in real trouble, guys. Like, this is taking too long. I read a report. I think Frank Cervelli wrote it, that Johnny Gaudreau has been offered $80 million, 10 years. And if you can, or $10 million a year at 8 years for $80 million. And if another team wants to do that, they can only sign him for seven. So they have to sign him for $11.4 million a year to give him what Calgary's offered him. And he still hasn't signed it. So to me, there's a guy that I'm going to get what I'm going to get. I want to maybe see who's interested and what kind of things are there. And then you have Tkachuk, who's sitting there going, well, if he's gone. And then the other aspect is, guys, if both those guys sign, Tkachuk's going to get nine. If he gets 10, what does the team look like? And if we're talking about that, Gaudreau and Tkachuk are talking about that. And if Gaudreau goes, Tkachuk's going to go, well, do I really want 9.5 here if we don't have Gaudreau and the team's not going to? And they talk about this and they look at it. So that's what's going to happen with the Jets. That's probably what is happening with some of the Jets stuff.
Can you imagine, Jim, if they lose both of those guys? Like that would set the franchise back 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, and it just speaks to why you have, like, the problem with Tkachuk's contract is that last deal, they paid him too much. They overpaid him because Gaudreau wasn't playing well and Monahan wasn't putting up points. They overpaid him. And so now this contract automatically is going to be something. And if you want long-term, it's going to be something more than that something. And that's where they mess that up, where the Jets have, you know, like, what's Kyle Connor going to make in two or when his deal's up in 4 years? Who knows? But they got that bridge deal in, and the bridge deal sounds ridiculous, but $6 million for point-of-game players is a very good 6 or 7 year deal. So they're in trouble. I mean, look at the Oilers. The Oilers have those guys on pretty friendly deals, as big as they are, McDavid and Draisaitl, and look at how tough it is. Now, I know the other contracts is what screwed over the Oilers and what they're dealing with, but those guys are on friendly contracts, and look at how tough it is to fill in around them. It's just, it's tough. So it'll be a fascinating summer, not just for the Jets.
Well, and more to that idea, Jim, you have Paul Stastny's comments, or the comments about Paul Stastny from Elliot Friedman on his 32 Thoughts podcast from the draft in Montreal. I'll read them for you. He said, Paul Stastny likely with a contender team that he thinks can win. Now, are the Jets not a contender? And obviously a big factor, and you mentioned it in one of your previous answers to Ez, Blake Wheeler. We know how close they are, how tight they are. If Blake Wheeler, if he doesn't think Blake Wheeler, despite the fact that he signed for a couple more years, is going to be a member of the Winnipeg Jets, does that impact Paul Stastny? And we know that there was a lot of frustration, I think, from Paul Stastny wanting to play center. And at least that's the way it came through. You hear many times, it's like, well, you know, I think like a center. I like playing in that center spot. When he got moved to center, you could see he liked that position better than being on the wing. I'm not saying he didn't have success on the wing. Clearly he did, because we saw like a revitalized Paul Stastny, but regardless, he's going to make some money this offseason, but it doesn't seem like it's going to be paid for by the Jets. So I guess the question becomes, like, there is going to be a lot of turnover, right? And obviously you have young guys like David Gustafson, Morgan Barron, guys who are going to come from the Moose and are going to take on greater roles, but you do need to fill guys, find guys. And I've been on the reduced Blake Wheeler's role on this team. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to become a fourth line winger, but he doesn't necessarily need to be your first line winger anymore. You know, let some of those young guys, let the Ehlers of the world take a greater responsibility. But you still have to find, if you don't have Wheeler next year and you don't have Stastny next year, you have to find guys who are going to fill that spot. You don't have Kopp next year, right? So this team could look very different, and you have to find those guys. And from a prospect perspective, you don't really have, I mean, as he said it to you early, you've got a lot of defense, right? And I went over it, and we're going to go over it later in the show. There's a lot of defensemen on this Jets team or in the prospect system.
Yeah.
Really, from a forward perspective, Morgan Barron, David Gustafson, you've got Cole Perfetti. You know, I mean, like, you don't have a ton. You traded away Nathan Smith, who's playing in Arizona now. So you don't have a ton of guys who are ready right now. You've got guys who are in the system, but they're not necessarily ready right now.
It's the old adage with Blake Wheeler. Get rid of him if you want, for all the detractors of him. But then who's scoring 4 points off a point of game player? Pace. Mm-hmm. I mean, get rid of him if you want, but he's been 4 or 5 points off a point of game player for the past 2 to 3 years. So 82 games, which right winger on this team is moving up there and scoring 75 points? And if you tell me it's Nick Ehlers, Nick Ehlers played three more minutes per game this year, mm-hmm. and he scored 60-some points again. More ice time does not lead to more points. I know he wasn't on the power play very much, but okay, fair enough. Excuse me. Put Nick Ehlers up there. I think Nick Ehlers is ready to be a first-liner. Don't get me wrong. But then who's scoring the 60 for Nick Ehlers? Mm-hmm. Is it Mason Appleton? Is it like that? This is what I always say. It's not a personal thing with me. If you want Blake Wheeler off this team, take him off the team. Who's replacing that production? Nobody in this roster. I said it when Laine was here. When Patrick Laine is the best right winger on this team, he will be on that number one line. And the day he was traded, he still wasn't better than Blake Wheeler. And so that's the issue they have now. And if they move Blake Wheeler, they have to sign somebody. They have to have some kind of plan. I don't know who it is in free agents here to bring him in or things like that. But you're right. This team's going to look different. In my estimation, Paul Stastny doesn't care about money anymore. Paul Stastny's going to sign a league minimum or the Corey Perry $1 million deal. And he's going to go back to Colorado or he's going to go back to St. Louis. Because I think that's what he'd do. I think he'll listen to the Jets, but the Jets are going to have to pay him $2 million. And he's going to have to see that this team has a legitimate shot at winning. I still think this is a playoff roster, guys. Things went horribly wrong. They didn't play well. I think they need a new system. They got a new coach that does this kind of thing. He just did it in Dallas with star players like Ben and Sagan and made them second-line players. They elevated their Rupee Hintzes and their Jason Robertsons, and they got very good success, except for this year, making the playoffs and going to Stanley Cup Final in 2 years. So there's a new system here. There's going to need new players. Maybe Paul Stastny goes, yeah, I'll come back for this one more run. But if Blake's not here, I just, if I'm Paul Stastny at my age and I haven't won a cup and St. Louis and Colorado are knocking and other teams are offering me $2 million, I'll take the league minimum $750 or $1 million to go to Colorado, wouldn't you? So I just, those are kind of things you're going to have to fill in. But yeah, I mean, Andrew Kopp is going to free agency. He's not resigning in New York. They can't afford it. There's a ton of talent out there. And I've always said this, the Nick Paul guys was disappointing to me. The Jets need a Nick Paul. The Jets need guys like that at $3 million yep. that whatever, they might score 30 points. And 30 points is more than the top six contributed anyway. But 30 points in the regular season. But come playoff time, Nick Paul won Tampa Bay some games on the third line. And I think the Jets need to augment that bottom six. You haven't asked me yet, but my philosophy is what we saw in the playoffs. It's what Calgary did in the regular season. It's what Colorado won a Stanley Cup with. It's how Tampa Bay got back to a Stanley Cup. You don't need six stud defensemen. You need two to three. And you can have your Radko Gudas's on Florida and your Brandon Montour's on Florida. You can have your Zach Bogosian's on Tampa Bay. Colorado's a very good D, fair enough. But Calgary did what they did in the regular season.
Shout
in the
out playoffs. To Jack Johnson, right, Jim?
Jack Johnson. Eric Goodbranson was supposedly done till he got to Calgary. Oliver Shillington. These are not stud defensemen. What you need is four solid lines that can play a 200-foot game. You need guys that the Jets have top six that can score and can't defend, and they have a bottom six that can defend and can't score. They need to spread that out and have four lines that can play 200-foot hockey, and you'll win more games.
Now, speaking of stud defensemen, Jim, I want to take it back to Alberta because, of course, you're a good Alberta boy. Duncan Keith retired, and I don't think, you know, I don't know if you were surprised by that or a lot of people were surprised by that, considering that, you know, his age and he only had 1 year left on his contract. And obviously, you know, he didn't necessarily play as well as he would like just based on his standards, but multiple Stanley Cup winner, Conn Smythe trophy. I mean, is he a Hall of Famer? I mean, that's an argument that I think would be a good argument. I think you could make a good
case. He's a Hall of Famer.
I agree. I think you can make it, especially what he's done at the international level with Canada, but when you consider that his contract now comes off the books, I believe it was $5.5 million. Yeah. And then you throw in the Zach Cassian money because, of course, he was traded to Arizona. I mean, it looks like Edmonton now finally is out of cap hell. I mean, they obviously, you know, don't have as much cap space as some other teams. But how do you use it if you're Edmonton? Because obviously they need a goaltender. Like, to me, Darcy Kemper makes a lot of sense for the Leafs. But doesn't Darcy Kemper make a lot of sense for the Oilers, right? Like, nearby from Saskatchewan, Saskatoon. Like, what were your kind of thoughts on that? I guess, two-part question. Your thoughts on Keith retiring, and then also, like, what do you do with that cap space? Because just similar to the Jets, it's not like the Oilers, you know, have a lot of time here. They're also in win-now mode. So you got to get it right and make sure that you use every single one of those dollars well and, you know, augment the current group that you have.
Well, this is going to sound rich because Ken Holland's a Hall of Famer, but I don't know what he's doing. He should not have signed Zach Hyman, and he should have gave Jacob Markstrom an extra mil a year. If they both offered him six, they should have gave him seven to get him there and not signed Zach Hyman. Now, I don't know what he's doing when I see Ville Husso go to Detroit for third round pick and signing for under $5 million for 3 years. He should have been in on that.
What a signing.
I have no idea how Colorado pulled off that trade. Well, I do know. I saw what the price was paid, and the Oilers needed to pay that price. Now, they didn't have a second, third, or fourth round this year. So I get that those goalies were acquired for second and third round picks, but you do the year after. And then instead of third round picks, you make it a second round pick, and you get one of those goalies. The idea that the Oilers are going to sign a free agent goalie means to me they're going to overpay. And it's going to come in at $6 million. And they just freed up eight. They had to free up eight. They have to re-sign Tyson Barrie. They need him. Duncan Keith retiring is a favor to him. I also saw, though, as a retirement in his contract, he gets $1.8 million, so close to $2 million. So I'm going to retire and get a bonus package here. You know, because I honestly thought that maybe the doors are on the wall. It's not that we don't like you, Duncan, but I don't know where all your equipment went. It's not here anymore. What happened? But we'll find it for you. And your parking stall has gone to the guy who does the tweeting for us now. Sorry about that.
But we do have a nice.
I don't know if they were pushing him out the door, is what I'm saying. But I just think that he's a pride guy, and he's getting some money anyways this year in retirement because he's retiring early. And I just think it was time. So that $8 million isn't going to go very far. They got to sign Tyson Barrie, and they got to sign a goalie. And those two alone, Tyson Barrie is going to get $5 million. So now you're left with three. And maybe he is. Like, I'm being silly. Ken Holland probably was in on those deals and asking what the cost was. I just think that was his safest route, was to go get one of those two goalies and sign them to the three-year deals that they've signed at under $5 million. And then when two or three years go by, see how they're doing and either pay them the six or seven when their contracts are up in 3 years, or they're not doing well, but in two or three years, you'll have more cap space. So that's what I would have done. The goaltending market is just fascinating, guys. I'm so excited to see where this goes. Far be it from me to hack on Darcy Kemper, because I like him as a goalie. But he was on the best team in the National Hockey League, and he won a Stanley Cup with a sub 900% save percentage. So I don't know if he's the savior of all saviors. Like 2 years ago when Markstrom came on the board, I thought I would sign him. Mm-hmm. There's some other big names out, like Jack Campbell. I don't know. Like, he's had some really good games, I think, with a better defensive team in front of him. But is he $5 or $6 million a year? Like, is he going to be the guy that gets you over the hump? He's going to be better, don't get me wrong, and maybe that's all they need. I mean, I said that about defense corps, and Colorado just won with Darcy Kemper. So if you have McDavid and Drysdale, maybe that's all you need. You don't need a Vezina. You just need a guy that is solid like Campbell. So
Colorado's,
it's fascinating
taking a
to me.
Page out of the Carolina playbook.
Yeah.
Right? Don't pay your goalies too much, right?
Exactly. And I'm a big proponent of that. If you have a stud like Hellebuck, and there's only a few of them that can play 60, 65 games a year and play well, then you give them $6 to $8 million. And then your backup has to be whatever. Like I said with Eric Comrie, are you guys comfortable if they pay him $2.5-3 million and the goaltending on this team's costing you $9 million? As good as Eric Comrie is, and as much as we like him, no, you don't. Connor Hellebuck's going to play 65 games this year minimum. And you don't need to be paying a guy that's going to play less than 20 more than $2 million. So, but it's fascinating. And I like the Oilers. The price they paid to move Cassian, good Lord. Like, that is,
yeah, it was a lot.
I mean, if that's the price you're paying to move Cassian, I don't know what is going to happen with Blake Wheeler, but I also know that teams want Blake Wheeler. There are contending teams that would love to put him on their second line and the power play, and just he can make a difference. So the whole thing is fascinating. The Oilers, I don't know, kind of makes me smile, but that's for personal reasons. But because they're the Oilers.
Jimmy, time flies when you're having fun. And right now it seems like, despite the fact that we've had a good conversation, there's still a lot more questions than answers about.
Well, let's do some rapid fire if you have time. I talk too much. Rapid fire me one or two.
We got to head to break. We're, you know, we got bills to pay.
Who's your favorite member of the legal curve? Go.
Oh, that's a good one. There you go.
Well, I like you both equally. Oh, and I can't stand Drew.
There we go. There we go.
I love all three of you. Where is Drew? Is he on vacation or
he's coming home from Kentucky. So
right,
he's
the on family his way. Down in Kentucky.
He went there for National Fried Chicken Day, Jim. So he's coming back about 10 pounds heavier. But he should be back any hour now in the beautiful province of Manitoba.
Yeah, my girlfriend has a story of somebody from her hometown who went for a bucket of chicken and never came back.
Well, we're hoping the same will happen with Drew. So fingers crossed, we will see.
Guys, I'm sorry I went on and on, but it's always fun to talk with you. I'll do it anytime. Great
Jim,
stuff.
You never it's going to be a fascinating offseason. Never have to apologize. That's why we bring you on. We could have you on for another hour. I mean, we know
anytime,
that you
want to
get going with your Saturday morning, but don't apologize.
I do believe.
Love it. Great conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me always. You guys know I love being on. I love you guys. I can't wait to see you when the season does roll around again. Looks like we'll be able to be down at the rink a little bit more too. But I do think it's going to be a fascinating offseason. And I do think the Jets are going to make changes. I think that's still to come. So it's going to be exciting. Next week's free agency. And we'll see what happens with them. And I'll be glad to join you once some things start moving.
And I will say, Jimmy, just quickly, and then we're going to go to break. But you are right. The return to normality, when I saw the schedule, I was excited. I was like, wow, finally a schedule beginning in October, ending in April, obviously.
The nightmare is over.
The Jets fans are hoping for playoffs, but like, you know, won't it be nice if free agency is happening? Here's a crazy notion. Have it happen before the end of June so we can enjoy Canada Day, have that be a separate thing. But, you know, and I will say quickly that the Rick Bowness presser on Monday, it was nice to be back in person with everyone in the Maxwell's Media Center. And then being able to scrum with Rick after and Kevin Cheveldayoff off after, you know, in tight quarters. So it felt back to normal. And I think
as you guys know, that's where we find out information. That's where you get little tips. Like you rocking down the press box in intermission, there's a scout that you haven't seen for a while, and there's people you know. And like a buddy I grew up with, Jamie Pusher's director of scouting in Tampa Bay now. And I would find out things that, you know, things are going on or what they think. That's where like people go, why do you like Brian Little so much? And I'm like, wow, in the past month, there's been four
Alberta.
GMs say, I'd love to get Brian Little, you know, and stuff. So that's where you find out what other people are thinking and stuff, but also see guys like you and see who's going to be the 7-year-old and order the cheese pizza after the game.
That would be me, Jimmy, but you're 100% right. And I've had people ask me questions and I'm like, we don't really have insight because we haven't been in the room. We don't know what it's like. You know, generally after practice, you sit, you talk, you see things. You just don't have that same level of observation that you would have 2 years ago. So we don't know a lot of the machinations, and everything that comes in is really is speculative, and we're not in the business of speculating. So, I mean, sometimes we speculate, but not in a rumor sort of way. And I think that, like I said, that's what I'm hoping for in the 22-23 season is that return to normality, that return to that level of interactivity that allows you to, as I said, what we've been doing for, you know, since the Jets came back and, you know, with the Moose is that you have that level of interactivity with players. They know you, they recognize you. It changes the dynamic. You're not asking questions like we are right now, and it's different when there's an ease to it. But when you have that familiarity, and again, it's not about, oh, hey, we're buddies. You can still ask a guy a hard question, but at least it's there's an ability to have a conversation after the fact, not just cut it off. And I just think that is going to go a long way, I think, towards changing. Well, I mean, I think providing information, I think it's going to be a huge help for the media. So I think that's going to be great. And I think it'll be ultimately better for the players and the teams as well. So, okay, we're going to leave on that note because we could keep rolling for the next hour. So Jimmy Toth, CJOB 680, CJOB, thanks very much for joining us this morning, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to head to commercial break right now to pay some bills.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hi, Ez. A strange question for you. Why are you lying on the ground being crushed by a piano?
Well, Drew, I definitely tried to carry this baby grand piano down the stairs by myself, and somehow I failed miserably.
right. I'm sorry. That was a silly question on my part. My apologies. Would you like me to call Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage to help you move the piano? They are the most experienced piano moving company in Winnipeg, after all.
Yes, please call Rolly's and hurry. This piano is very, very heavy.
Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage offers stress-free residential moving services while taking great care of your personal belongings, including your piano. At Rolly's, no job is too big or too small. For more information, visit rollys.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Hey, it's Aaron from Bernstein's Deli.
That's right, Ezzy. I'm the guy who makes all your sandwich dreams come true.
So when you think Illegal Curve, what comes to you?
How about juicy chicken schnitzel, grilled salami, fried onions, melted cheddar cheese, and honey mustard on toasted thick-cut city rye bread?
Man, that's like the holy grail of sandwiches.
And so it shall be known as the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
The Illegal Curve Sandwich. Try it today at Bernstein's Deli. Find us at Corridon and Lanark or online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That first hour flew by with Jimmy Toth of CJOB 680. Jimmy, always a fun guest to have, Ezzy. And, you know, there's a lot to talk about. That's kind of what I've been pushing this show. We do not lack for things to discuss here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday morning, July 9th. You know, normally we'd be talking free agency already at this point. Free agency would be done. We'd actually be talking development camp. There won't be a development camp this year. Kevin Cheveldayoff said that on Monday during the Rick Bowness press conference. He said that the Jets aren't going to have one. His rationale was a bit curious. I didn't really understand it. He essentially said, it sounds like Perfetti and Chaz Lucius have injuries that they're still dealing with, that they're not necessarily going to be available if they were to hold something. And then he also suggested that because of the World Juniors in August and a lot of the players that they're going to draft are going to go and then come back, and they didn't want to put that on them to be here for a week. But I don't necessarily think it's a great idea, because I think now is the time when, here's a crazy notion, get these guys into Winnipeg in July when it's beautiful to be here, make them think, wow, this place is fantastic. Maybe don't bring them here in December, January, February. But and more importantly, it gives these guys an opportunity to bond, form relationships. For some of them, like Rutgers McGroarty, it doesn't really matter because he's connected to all these guys. He's connected to Garrett Brown. He's connected.
Did you just add an S to Rutgers' name?
I don't think so. Did I say Rutgers? I don't think he's going to the University of New Jersey. But the point is that I just think that you give these guys an opportunity to create relationships with their fellow prospects. And again, competition breeds, that dynamic, and the evaluation with them within the system is important for the Jets. But for whatever reason, the organization chose not to hold a development camp. Ezzy, let's get back into the draft in Montreal, because there's so much to talk about. You know, with the first pick that the Jets had on Thursday night, and we talked about it obviously on Thursday, but you know, there's been a lot more that's come out about him, and with the 14th overall pick, like I said, Rutgers McGroarty. And what were your overall impressions now? They've had a few days to let that pick sink in. One that, again, was seen as a bit early, you know, a bit of a reach in the sense that a lot of people had him in the 20s. But regardless, like I said, Mark Scheifele, he was picked in the teens and the Jets took him early. So, and that seemed to work out.
Yeah, and we were fortunate enough to have him on for, you know, six, seven, 8 minutes on Thursday night. And you know, watched a few of the other, you know, interviews that he's done since then, right, Dave? And, you know, we had the, we saw the video of him and Garrett Brown talking, FaceTiming right after Garrett Brown was selected by the Jets at, what was it, 99th overall?
Yeah.
Son of former San Jose Shark Curtis Brown, right? So, I mean, anybody who's seen Rutger McGroarty since the Jets drafted him can tell that he's got a larger than life personality, right? Like, it's just obvious. And I love that. I mean, I absolutely love that. I love everything about this kid. And I mean, we're not sure, you know, like ultimately what his role or what he projects to as an NHLer, but it's hard to not see him, Dave, as a top six player with the Jets, right? Like, it's just everything about him screams top six player. Probably take him 2 or 3 years to get there, right? Like, we were speculating. I mean, he's obviously going to play at least 1 year at Michigan, right?
Yeah.
Possibly plays a couple of years at Michigan, but you're looking at a guy who's, you know, a couple of years away from the NHL, as most players are, whether you're a first round pick or a third round pick, right? So that's what stands out to me of all of the players. And we've been covering every draft since 2011, Dave.
Yeah.
He might have the biggest personality of any player the Jets have drafted. So that stands out to me. And it also stands out to me that the type of player he is a little bit different than what the Jets have gone with the last few years. Like, let's be honest here. Heinola, Lucius, Perfetti, these guys are small, skilled players. Rutger McGroarty is very skilled. Like, we talked about the 50 goals last year with the U.S. National Development Program, but he's an in-your-face player, right? Like, Mark Hillier was asked, what kind of goal scorer is he? He scores goals, but what kind of goal scorer is he? And he said, comes out from the corner, in front of the net, gets those greasy goals. He compared himself to Matthew Tkachuk, and it makes a lot of sense. If he turns into 60% of Matthew Tkachuk, the Jets are going to have an unbelievable hockey player. Because as we talked about with Jim, I mean, Matthew Tkachuk is one of the most unique players in the league when you factor in, you know, the physicality and the goal scoring and the playmaking, right? So love that pick. And then going back to Brad Lambert, who we've obviously talked about, you know, quite a bit here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's exciting that the Jets got a player that could have easily been a top 10 pick, maybe not necessarily a top five pick, but leading up to the draft, some scouts thought, you know, a team might take a shot at him, you know, in the top 10, right? So that's really exciting. And it's going to be, you know, interesting, as we talked about before, to see if he goes the Finnish League route or the WHL route. But I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, these two players are very intriguing. You know, they might not have the high end, you know, skill potential, I guess that you would say, of a Cole Perfetti, but I really don't think Rutger McGroarty is going to be that far off. Like, you know, are we talking about a 50-point player at the NHL level, Dave? Are we talking about a 70-point player at the NHL level? It's impossible to know right now at 18 years old, right? But I think, you know, after every draft, every single year, we always say this, but that's what's the most exciting, is that you can see the potential there and you can dream a little bit about what these guys are going to be like at the NHL level. So I'm sure on illegalcurve.com, you know, we're going to be documenting Rutger McGroarty's season on a very good University of Michigan's team. And same thing goes for Brad Lambert and, you know, Danny Jilkin and all these other prospects, Garrett Brown. You know, Jets fans love knowing how their prospects are going to be doing. So I think overall, like, most Jets fans, I think, should be pretty happy with what they got out of the first round. And in the later rounds, and we know that, you know, as the rounds get later, the likelihood of these guys, you know, having long NHL careers decreases. Mm-hmm. But I personally really like it. And I think there were other good options there for the Jets. But I like how Mark Hillier said, we had him, you know, higher than a lot of teams in the draft, and the confidence that he was showing in his pick, and all amateur scouting staffs are going to show confidence in their pick. But I think, you know, there's just a lot to like about Rutger McGroarty, and, you know, just listen to him speak for 30 seconds and you can tell that this guy, you know, loves hockey, and, you know, he loves life. And I think, you know, that's going to rub off on his future teammates.
Yeah. And I think you could see it, right? You could see the, just the joy. And that's why I always say that this is our favorite time of the year. And this is what we love to cover more than anything, is just because there's a pureness to the draft that you don't experience when dollars and cents gets invested in the game. And it becomes about a business. And we're talking about whether this guy's going to accept $10 million or he wants $11.8 million. I mean, that element is removed when you have this kind of excitement. And we'll get into Dominic, the seventh rounder, but you know, you could hear when he was asked, and he gave a great answer. I'm going to talk about it later, but the importance of being at the draft and getting your name called and putting on a jersey, and like even watching Rutger like look down at the jersey and being like, wow, this is so cool. Like, and you know, again, you kind of, you know, we always look at good stories, right? I remember in 2014, and he didn't pan out in terms of as a player, but Jacob Cederholm was a fourth round draft pick of the Jets, Swedish kid, really nice kid, one of the nicest. Got up, and I remember he shook everybody's hand after the draft in Philadelphia, after he was done his media availability. And Rutger is similar. Like, you watch what he's doing on social media, and obviously the team's putting this out, but like just even the way he hugged Ivan, what was the name of the draft pick? As he, I'm going to forget it, from the Capitals stuff. What was his name?
Sorry,
again?
Draft pick, Dave. Sorry.
Yeah. What were you asking? Like the draft pick that the Capitals, what was his name? The one who had, who beat cancer. Ivan,
I'll have to look it up. Just give me a second. I'll look it up.
It's, what was his name? Anyways, it's escaping me right now. And Miroshenko. And you could see, like, he gave him a big hug. So the kid's a character guy. But as I said on Thursday, it's not just about character. It's about being able to score. And it seems like he's going to be able to do what the Jets need, which is be that guy who has some hands, get into the tough areas. He's working on his skating, but that's fine. You can work on your skating. As long as you have good puck sense, as long as you have the hockey sense, the ability to be good positionally, you know.
90% of these guys are working on their skating. I mean, even the good skaters are working on their skating.
Like, hashtag bigger, faster, stronger, right? I mean, how many times do you hear that after? Well, what are you going to work on? Well, I got to get bigger, faster, stronger.
Exactly. And we've been looking at a lot of the scouting reports, you know, leading up to the draft. And you see that about a lot of players, right? So I think needing to work on skating shouldn't be confused with bad skater. And Mark Hillier mentioned that, right? Like, so I just wanted to throw that out there, Dave. You know, he's not a bad skater. He was just drafted 14th overall. So, I mean, he's not a bad skater. It's just that I think it's more the explosiveness that he wants to work on.
And he's working with Barb Underhill, who's a phenomenal skating coach. So, I mean, that's going to help him. And you know, quickly on Lambert, I mean, just, you know, going to what Mark Hillier and I suggest that all of our people watching right now, not while we're on, but after the show, go on to LegalCurve.com. You can watch the director of Jets amateur scouting talking post-draft, and one of the things he was talking about was Brad Lambert. And I just thought a lot of the comments were interesting. One was that he was very hopeful that he will be playing for Seattle, so clearly we know what the Jets' feelings are. He called him, I think he's the best skater with the best speed in the draft. Don't worry about what happened. And then one of the things they told him, don't worry about what happened last year. We believe in you. Obviously, a good message. And then the last thing was, and I thought it was an interesting comment. He said, speaking about the World Juniors, he said he was the best player he saw in the two games. Obviously, they got canceled. He said if the World Juniors didn't get canceled and he kept up that play, he's not going 30th overall to the Winnipeg Jets. So the Jets look like they've lucked out. I suspect that they're extraordinarily happy to have gotten him because, again, you know, it's something that they need. A guy with speed, a guy with playmaking ability, a guy who can make things happen. You know, almost like a, you know, we talk about David Gustafson being at an Adam Lowry light, maybe – Brad Lambert is a Nikolaj Ehlers light. So we'll find out, you know, what happens there. And then as he moved to the next day, right? The next day, of course, started with a bunch of trades. And in fact, while we've been live on air, there's been a big signing. Nashville Predators have signed Philip Forsberg to a big, I think it was an 8-year deal with Nashville. So things are happening in the hockey.
They had to re-sign him after the year that he had, right, Dave? Like, I mean, absolutely. Forsberg has been, I don't know if you would call him the face of the franchise because that the face of the franchise has probably more been Pekka Rinne and Roman Josi, right? But he's been right up there, right? Like you think about the battles between the Jets and the Predators in that 2017-18 season, right?
Yeah.
Was it that Predators had 117 points and the Jets had 114 points, something like that. I might be off by a few points. There was something like that. You forget the Jets almost won the President's Trophy. I mean, a lot of people don't, but some people do because it was, what, 4 years ago now, but you gotta keep Forsberg. I mean, if you don't have Philip Forsberg, I mean, who are you replacing that offense with, right? So, I mean, Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene had great bounce back years. And Roman Josi, I mean, we know what did he have? 97 points, 100 points. I forget if he hit 100 points. Point is, he's one of the best offensive defensemen in the league. So that contract makes a lot of sense. And we haven't talked about this on the show, Dave, I don't think, but that Ryan McDonough trade was pretty clever, if you ask me, right? Like, McDonough's, you know, he's not going to put up the offensive numbers that maybe you know, especially compared to Roman Josi. But, you know, that top four is really good with Matthias Ekholm and Dante Fabbro, mm-hmm. right? So I like that move. Nashville, I'm not saying that Nashville's, you know, all of a sudden, you know, a Stanley Cup contender with Ryan McDonough, but they're also not worse than they were last year. So not necessarily great for Jets fans, but, I mean, I just think that Ryan McDonough move was really clever.
Well, and okay, so let's finish off. We'll go through the Friday of the draft as because it's obviously something we've talked about a little bit. But one of the things the Jets needed to do was restock the right side of the cupboard. And I know they always say, like, hey, you know, we draft best player available, not necessarily who, you know, what our organizational need is, because it may look different in a year, 2 years. But Elias Samuelsson, a Swedish defender from, I'm not going to get his, where he's from, right? Because I think he said Shefta, but it doesn't look like that, but he called it Shefta, and he's going to be playing there in the 22-23 season with them. And you know, it's interesting, right? He talked about who he compares himself to, and it sounded like defensemen that are based out of his hometown. But Adam Larson was one of the names. You know, John Klingberg was another. So I mean, look, the Jets hope that, and they seem to be adding to the Swedish contingent. It's one of the things I funnily tweeted about, right? You've got all these guys now since like 2016, Arvid Holm. And then, I mean, obviously they've had other guys before that, but I'm saying who are currently in the prospect pool. But no, you go from Arvid Holm, you know, Gustafsson, Torgerson, who else is there? I see there's a whole host of other Swedish guys that I'm forgetting. Johansson that they said he was the fifth round pick in 2020, I think. So
well, let's talk about Salomonsson. Salomonsson, yeah. I mean, obviously I have never watched him play, sure. So I got to qualify that. I'm not going to pretend like I'm some type of expert on
Swedish. Wait, that's why we had you on, Ezzy. I wanted to know what you thought of his game is in the CSHL last year.
Well, and the thing is, like, that's what we always talk about, how, you know, people rush to judgment based right. on just reading scouting reports. Mm-hmm. Well, first off, scouting reports will vary. I mean, just look at the rankings, right? But yeah. I think what stood out to me about Salomonsson is that, you know, he's a two-way defenseman. And the fact that he compared himself to Adam Larson, you know, Adam Larson, even though he was drafted fourth overall, you know, I'm a Devils fan. That trade still was a terrible trade. But, you know, he has turned into a pretty good right shot defenseman, right? Obviously, you know, goes to Seattle. But I thought it was interesting because you expect Swedish defensemen. Who do you expect Swedish defensemen to always compare themselves to? Eric Karlsson, right? Like, it's like, oh, he's an Eric Karlsson light.
By the way, showing my age, I was going to say Nicklas Lidström, but go ahead.
Or Nicklas Lidström, right? If you want to go back to, yeah. Arguably one of the best defensemen of all. No, not arguably one of the best defensemen. Arguably be the best defenseman mm-hmm. up there with Bobby Orr, right? So I think he's an interesting prospect. And I think, you know, if you want to look at the rankings and everything like that, some scouts had him going a little bit higher, but based on Bob McKenzie's rankings, he almost went exactly where he should have gone, right? So this isn't mm-hmm. right, like a player that dropped or anything like that. But what stood out to me reading his prospect reports and watching a few highlights was this is a guy that, you know, puck mover, really good skater, has an offensive touch, but solid defensively, right? And then there's nothing perfect about his game because, you know, he's a second round pick, but that's kind of what stood out to me, that, you know, he's going to be one of those guys that just gives the Jets, Dave, another option on the right side. And Mark Hillier was asked about that. Chevy was asked about that. You know, Mark Hillier joked, I know you heard this, Dave. He said, we would have taken him if he was a left shot defenseman. So even though the Jets, I don't think are, you know, it's not like the Jets are like, we have to have five draft prospects that are on the left side and five yeah. draft picks on the right side. But we know a guy like Declan Chisholm, it's going to be really tough for him to get into many NHL games. I mean, there's always injuries, but with Ville Heinola and Dylan Sandberg ahead of you there, it's just going to be tough for him. So I think that's what stood out to me about Salomonsson. It just seems like he's not necessarily excellent at any one thing. He's just a really good all-around defenseman. And it just adds another prospect for the Jets that they hope a couple of years from now can, you know, come over, play for the Moose. And then, you know, hopefully eventually he turns into an NHLer. If he can be a top four defenseman, who knows? It doesn't seem like he has that upside, but you never know. Again, you have to remind yourself, these kids are 18 and you're really not going to know what they're going to be for at least 2 or 3 years.
Well, and then we'll move to the fourth round, Ezzy, and, you know, oh, sorry, the third round. Third round. Sorry, I got ahead of myself. I got excited. But, and this was originally not a Jets draft pick. If you remember the Jets draft pick, the original Jets third rounder was traded to the Canucks as part of the Nate Schmidt deal. This one came by way of the Patrick Laine trade, although someone appropriately tweeted at me, it's probably more appropriate to say this was part of the Jack Roslovic deal, whereas Laine and Dubois were kind of straight up for each other. So with the third round pick, 77th overall, they took Danny Jilkin. You know, you told an interesting story. He plays for the Guelph Storm of the OHL. An interesting player, an interesting prospect. And again, that's kind of what the Jets wanted to get, right? Someone like that who plays that style of game, not necessarily finesse, but something a little bit more hard-nosed.
Yeah, absolutely, Dave. It's a very intriguing prospect because, again, he was a guy that was considered a possible first-rounder at the beginning of the hockey season, right? And he's played really well. He was considered to be one of the top players for Team Canada at the U17s. I know that. I'm not sure. I'd have to look up his point totals at the U18s. He won a gold medal with Team Canada, but I'd have to look up how many points he had. But I know he's another guy that played, I think he was on Shane Wright's line at the top prospects game. And it's just a guy that, like, again, kind of similar to Nikita Chibrikov in the sense that this guy's a smooth puck handler, good shot, playmaker. You know, you hear that the defensive side of the game, you know, is from some scouts is better than others, right? But this guy seems like he's a very dynamic player. And that is a common thread with Jets draft picks, right? Like skill, skill, skill. So Jilkin, I think, is a very intriguing prospect. And he had, even though he, you know, he didn't have necessarily the best numbers, I think he was around 55 points with the Guelph Storm. I think what you heard from a lot of kind of insiders, if you want to call it that, in the scouting world, is that Jilkin maybe, you know, why he fell to the third round is because of that year where he didn't play, right? And a lot of players in the Ontario Hockey League didn't play specifically, right? Because if I'm not mistaken, the WHL during that year, they played a little bit more, whereas the OHL didn't play. So Jilkin's a really intriguing one because, you know, the Jets scouts are going to get to watch him more because he's going to play for Guelph as opposed to if he was in Russia, because of course he's Russian, but he's really Canadian. So a lot to like about this kid. And, you know, do the Jets have a steal here in the third round? They possibly could, but I think he's going to put up much bigger numbers this year. I mean, he's probably going to be, you know, around a 90 point player for Guelph this year.
Well, and Eddie, restocking the cupboard was.
You can call me Eddie. Ray. You can call me Jay.
Well, restocking the cupboard was the idea. 99th overall pick, just the second time they've had that. The other time, of course, was Chase DeLeo in 2014. I think, 2014. But they go back to California. You know, his dad is Canadian, and they went with the son of Curtis Brown, who played 736 games in the NHL. 6'2", right shot defenseman, Garrett Brown. He was actually, and again, this is the last of the traded draft picks, because if you recall, this originally went to the Jets' original fourth rounder, went to Vegas as part of the Paul Stastny trade. So they got this pick from the Brian Little trade with Arizona. So Garrett Brown is part of the Brian Little deal. But again, big, tough, right shot defenseman. And really, like I said before, if you look at the prospects now, and I would say that 17s are technically not prospects in Kovacevic and Gavanke, especially because I think Kovacevic will be with the Jets, I mean, this year. But really now you've got Lundmark, 2019 second rounder, Bauer, right, the 2020, so you have fifth rounder, sixth rounder, Salmonson now, and Brown. So, I mean, you've at least augmented the right side of your prospect pool.
Didn't realize you were done there, Dave. Garrett Brown was one of the guys. I forgot if he was a forward or a defenseman there. I was just looking up a scouting report on Garrett Brown. And I think what's interesting too is, you know, similar to some of the players that come from non-traditional markets, let's call it that, like Rutger McGroarty from Nebraska, as you mentioned, San Jose is not considered a hotbed, but he's one of those guys that came through the Junior Sharks program, Dave, as you know. So there was another player, I'm forgetting his name, that was drafted yesterday that was from San Jose as well. But yeah, I mean, I think, again, I haven't seen him play. I've never watched any highlights of Garrett Brown.
Of course.
But based on the scouting reports, it seems like he's, again, kind of not necessarily a high offensive upside. He's going to play, I believe, for the University of Denver, right, Dave? Correct. So, I mean, this kind of, to me, at least, I don't know if Mark Hillier would call it this. To me, it seems like this one's a little bit more of a project, right? Like, I can't say this with any certainty. I mean, we would have to ask, you know, somebody with the Jets, but it seems like this is a candidate to play 2, 3, maybe even 4 years of college hockey, as opposed to, you know, Rutger McGroarty, who, of course, could sign with the Jets after 1 year. So Garrett Brown, I think, is a little bit more of an unknown just because I don't think the offensive upside is necessarily there But yeah, he's a big boy and just another kind of long-term right side prospect. But to me, it seems, at least, again, I don't have any inside knowledge, Dave, you might know more, but it seems like he's more of a candidate to play 2 or 3 years as opposed to 1 to 2 years in college. Yeah. So that's why, you know, I think he's what project maybe is. I don't necessarily love that word. He's more of a long-term prospect, a guy that I think, you know, will probably take more development, just considering where he was drafted and the type of player he is. We know defensemen take a little bit longer to marinate, but certainly really exciting. And it was awesome to watch him FaceTiming Rutger McGroarty and just the smile on his face. Also just seems like a big personality for Garrett Brown.
Well, and you know, Ezzie, you're 100% right. And it's funny how even Mark Hilliard didn't know all these guys are connected. And so like he was asked about it after and he said, actually, I didn't even know until I was informed that these guys had all these sort of cross connections. And, you know, you're right. And again, like I said, people should go to the Jets social media because they posted, I think, on their Instagram, the FaceTime chat between McGroarty and Brown. But it was really funny because they're obviously very connected. They were talking about how their moms are friends and were texting. And there's a lot of excitement that he's going to be in Winnipeg. So, I mean, I think you're right. I think he could be another good personality and big right side defenseman. And we don't know. I think you said it best. I am not going to pretend to be some sort of expert on Garrett Brown. I didn't watch his games playing in the USHL. So, I mean, the reality to me is that you have to wait. You have to see. We'll get college reports. We'll talk to people that we know who cover college hockey. You'll get more insight. And then eventually he'll graduate to the Manitoba Moose and you'll go from there. And so, yeah, he's not a player after you hear his name. You're expecting to hear his name really for another, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. That's the sort of thing. So I don't think it's a slight on him by calling him a project. I just think that's just the reality of the situation, right? So moving to the fifth round, Jets didn't have a pick, of course, because that was part of the Zach Sanford deal that they made with Ottawa. So no fifth round pick for the Winnipeg Jets. And then in the sixth round, they went back to actually making their own selections for the sixth and seventh round. They took a Swedish winger. He's listed as a winger, but Mark Hillier actually said he was a center, was Fabian Wagner. Now, again, I am not even going to pretend, Ezzie, that I have any particular insight into what he is. I just think the only thing I could suggest is, Ezzie, wow, handed a coffee. Someone's doing well over there.
This is the type of family that I have out near Lac Du Bonny. My beautiful mother-in-law, a.k.a. Baba, just brought me a hot coffee because she knows, you know, I've been yammering with you, Dave M., so... I mean, that's the type of family I have. You know how good the Pfeffer family is. I married into one of the best.
You did well. You did well for yourself. There's no question about that. And the
Jets notice that I didn't say the best, because the Manouk family is pretty damn good too. But I got a great family, as many people do. I mean,
We're all proud, and there's nothing wrong with that. And that's a good point. But let's just quickly wrap up.
My brother-in-law, by the way, my brother-in-law just mooned me, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well, tell Dan to say hello. And then, that's what I said. I knew it was Dan and not
Aaron. Not only are they generous, they're jokesters.
Yes, yes. Well, anyways, so the point is, sixth round pick, they went back to the Swedish, you know, it's Sweetie Peg now, no longer Finnipeg. It's going to be all Nordic all the time. But again, there is something to that. Although David Gustafson did say, you know, last year, one of the things he talked about with Daniel Torgerson when he brought the 2022nd rounder in the fold was, we don't have factions. You know, just because you're Swedish doesn't mean, you know, it'll make it easier. I'll help you get acclimatized. That's why I think it's always good to have that. But, you know, on the Moose, not the Jets necessarily, but on the Moose, they were all buds. They didn't really need to be, you know, geographically distinct. Now, probably the most fun of a seventh round pick. Now, the most impactful seventh round pick the Jets have ever made, of course, was Sammy Niku in 2015, which was just a Hall of Fame draft by the Winnipeg Jets. No question about that. But he was the most.
Unfortunately, he never got freed.
He was never freed by the Winnipeg Jets, but although he had a very good run with Laval this offseason, they went to the Eastern Conference finals. And so I think they lost ultimately to Springfield, who lost to Chicago.
Is this the start of a Manouk Moose minute here?
It is not. Although without Mindy here, I could do whatever I want. I can play the button. But no, I know Lambert's a Finn, but I'm just saying that there are a lot of Swedes being added to the. I'm seeing someone saying that Lambert's
also Lambert's kind of technically a Finn, Canadian as well, right? Like
he's a half and half. He's 50-50.
He grew up Canadian. Canadian.
Exactly. There you go. Anyways, but now I am going to butcher. And the best was yesterday in the media availability with Mark Hillier was that all the guys and I'm like, I don't mean to throw them all under the bus, but like Murad and Mike and Weber, they were like, oh, you know, your goalie, Dom. And it was like Dominic De Vincentis. That's what I think I did all right with his last name. But I have to say,
well, you have been to Italy, Dave.
Three times, actually. But you're right. So there has been no hashtag no big deal.
Anyway, left our province. Wow. Well, three times.
You got to go to Italy. Italy is a fun place to be.
Good.
It's funny, actually. I was talking to a guy from Turkey yesterday. I was telling him how great Turkey is. I love Turkey too. So there's
you think in Turkey of... when they're eating like a turkey sandwich, they just like say like I'm eating a us.
It's like in 2017 when I was in China and I say I'm just eating food. I don't think I'm eating Chinese.
Still
food.
One of my favorite jokes of all time. I don't care what anybody says. Chinese food in China, they just call it food.
Yes, what a shocking notion. Anyway, so we're going to go to Dominic because I actually thought he had some really interesting comments. First of all, you know, he's a Canadian kid from Ontario, plays for North Bay, right? The battalions, right? And so you got a kid who, you know, he was behind a ninth, obviously OHL, the problems. And then he was, Mark Hillier said he was behind a 19-year-old last year. But then in the playoffs, he got a lot of action. But it was interesting because he's actually connected to Rutgers Now you're right. I did add an S there, Ezzy, but he is connected to Rutgers and you wouldn't expect that, but he went down, he trained with them. They were connected because they had played on teams early in life. And so they actually were good friends. So they thought that was rather interesting about the fact that during the COVID year, he actually went back and trained with him when the OHL was on pause. And just some of the stories he told about, you know, how he became a goalie. He just happened to be at skating lessons and said to his dad, who are these guys? He's like, those are goalies. He's like, well, I want to be a goalie then. And then he went to his Nana, I think is what he said. And he said, can you buy me hockey equipment? And she said, you have to be a street hockey goalie first before we'll buy you equipment and you can play goal. So that's what he did. He went and played street hockey and then ended up going and getting into goaltending and all that stuff. But I thought his answer.
Sorry, Dave, do they still make, is the Road Warrior brand? I mean, we're old farts now, so we don't play road hockey anymore. I mean,
yeah.
Once in a while, we'll you know, play a little floor hockey, such as at the Richard Tapper Memorial floor hockey tournament, stuff absolutely like that. But, you know, do they still make the Road Warrior? Because when we were kids, it was all about those black pads, right? The black and white Road Warrior pads, and then you'd get the matching glove and the matching blocker. So I wonder, well, maybe I have to ask him that. And then he's probably going to get a little bit creeped out when we ask him about a brand that hasn't existed. But I'm curious to know if the Road Warrior brand still exists. I mean, it's probably all CCM and Bauer and everything like that. But for us that used to play, whether it was, in the North End or, you know, on the streets of River Heights, it was all about those Road Warrior pads. Right, Dave?
Absolutely. The RHL, the Rubicon Hockey League, played on many years, lost teeth because I took a goalie stick in the mouth by one of my good friends. That's why I think Dom's actually the smartest one. Go in goal. You don't have to worry about losing teeth. Well, I guess you could, but not necessarily in street hockey. But anyways, I just thought his answer was really good too. I think it was Mike asked him about not being drafted and going there and sitting and waiting. And he just said it was so important for him to be there. And had he not been drafted, it wouldn't have impacted him because this would have meant he went back and trained harder and he would have forced his way. And he said, look, if I didn't get drafted the following year, guess what? I would have signed somewhere as a free agent because it's my dream and I'm going to work hard at it. So he's got the work ethic, you know, and it was funny. He talked about some of the guys that he follows. Goes, I'm going to have to start following the Jets because, you know, clearly he doesn't. But now the Jets are, of course, his favorite team. And I just thought, you know, he had such a good, positive attitude. And regardless of whether he pans out, you never know. You know, Jets, I mean, look, the Jets have done all right with goaltenders, right? Connor Hellebuyck in the fifth. You got Mikael Bernan in the sixth, got Arvid Holm in the sixth, and now you've got Dominic De Vincentis, or what I'm not pronouncing his right name right, I blew it again. De Vincentis or something like that in the seventh. So anyways, that's the Jets overall draft, Ezzy, and I think it'll take years for us to know how impactful that was, of course, with Winnipeg.
Case every year, and you know, just, you know, to wrap up De Vincentis, and hopefully we are pronouncing that wrong, or we'll just call him Dominic, not Don, maybe. I mean, I was just looking at another scouting report, and he actually had the lowest goals against average. First off, people have to not look necessarily take the stats at the OHL level with a grain of salt, because, of course, it's higher scoring, right? So when you look at the save percentage of the goals against, for an NHL goalie, that would look probably below average. But he had 14 wins, and he had the lowest GAA of any rookie goaltender in the Ontario Hockey League. So this was one of the best young goalies in the Ontario Hockey League, which is arguably, you know, the best junior hockey league. I mean, we could debate, you know, which is better, the WHL or the OHL. There's no right answer, by the way. But I think so. Just because he was drafted in the seventh round doesn't mean that this is like, you know, a mediocre prospect here. It's probably going to be, you know, 3-4 years before he plays pro hockey, or at least a couple of years before he plays pro hockey. Maybe not 3 or 4 years, but you know, like you said, he's got good character, and that's always a theme for the Jets. We know that they love their character guys. Rutger McGroarty's a character guy. I mean, Garrett Brown, we talked about, he's a character guy. You go back to all of these guys, right? Like Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry. The list goes on and on and on, Dave.
Yeah.
But that's what you got to keep in mind. These are 18-year-old kids that are going to be fun to watch. But don't get worried about attaching labels. Like, this guy's this. You know, this guy's never going to amount to anything. Well, just, you know, wait. How many people thought Connor Hellebuck was going to be a Vezina Trophy winning goaltender when he was drafted in the late round, fifth round in 2012? Maybe the Jets scouting staff, maybe Connor Hellebuck. So just pump the brakes a little bit. Just let time pass, and let it's going to be fun to watch these guys develop.
Speaking of Connor Hellebuck, and we'll get out of here very quickly because we're going to go to another commercial break, as he very soon. Although I've got to give a shout out to Rob Somerville. Check the Road Warrior Hockey Equipment website at for you as, and he said they are still manufacturing
amazing
pads. So well, maybe we can, you know,
it's nice. You know, it's nice to see that. Unfortunately, Hockey Hutch is no longer open, but it's nice to see that you know, Road Warrior brand is still kicking.
There you go. So we'll shout out to the Road Warriors. Ezzy and I we're the ultimate warriors right now.
We're Animal and Hawk right here.
Yeah. should we start doing the moves? By the way, speaking of wrestling, I'm going to come back on the other side of the break.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to start talking about the draft.
That was the best.
That, to me, was the highlight, but I don't want to do it yet, just yet. Let's go to commercial break, pay some bills, give a shout-out to our sponsors, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the draft and some more Jets stuff, and we'll wrap up. Well, we're not going to wrap up the show. Still got 20 minutes. Let's go, baby. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I am your host, Dave Manuk. I may as well just start calling myself the host, not temporary host. I'm the host of the show, and I'm joined by my number one man, Ezra Ginsberg. And we already know we're the two favorites. We're going to call ourselves the co-MVPs for Jim Toth. Not a fan of Drew Mandel, obviously. And as one of the best moments for me by far of the draft, and I don't have the clip. We don't even have the rights to play the clip, so that's fine. Who cares? But the truth is,
I'm sure, in the private chat.
Oh, okay. I still don't know how. Hold on. I'll look at that in a sec. If I can pull it up, I'll try. But what I was going to say is one of my favorite moments, and I'm watching the draft, and is, you know, Bruce Boudreau. First of all, Bruce Boudreau's appearance was just hilarious in and of itself. You can just see he's just having fun. And then all of a sudden, they drop Kevin Owens, the wrestler from Quebec of the WWE. We all know Bruce Boudreau is a big wrestling fan, and that the Canucks apparently have a belt that they give to the best player of the game, kind of like the helmet, the fighter helmet that the Jets do. But I just thought it was such a funny moment, and Bruce Boudreau's look of like excitement to meet like Kevin Owens, and like it was hilarious. I even quoted him because I thought it was so. He goes, "I want to be your Lou Albano." And for anybody who grew up in the '80s, Captain Lou Albano, you can't forget about him. He was an all-time great.
Did he have a wrestling parrot on his shoulder?
No, that's Coco Beware.
Right.
But Captain
Lou Albano had the Hawaiian shirt and the big goatee.
Yeah,
right?
And he had those things. He had like the rings that were like on his cheeks.
Right. And he wasn't Hulk Hogan's original manager. That was classy Freddie Blassie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We are of the WWF vintage.
I am a big wrestling vintage fan. I mean, we could talk to Mike McIntyre too. He's a big wrestling guy. So is Huss. But I started watching wrestling, like, for people that are around my age. I'm about to turn 40. I mean, my era was obviously Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, Bret Hart, Jake the Snake. I mean, I could go on and on. We could do a two-hour wrestling show easily. I think at one point we actually was talking to Chris Curry, who was a producer at TSN 1290, about doing a wrestling show. But I just watched it, and he says, "Are you kidding me? This is fabulous. This is awesome." Unbelievable, because Bruce Boudreau, as you mentioned, Dave, is a huge wrestling fan. Yeah. And Kevin Owens, who's I don't know if he's from Montreal, but he's from Quebec. You know, and he's been a pro wrestler for a long time now.
Yeah.
It was so funny because he actually like almost turned into a kid, right?
Oh my God, it's amazing.
It was hilarious. Yeah, it was Jackie Redmond. For those who haven't watched it, it was Jackie Redmond and EJ Hradec, right?
Yeah.
NHL Network. Yeah. We were talking to Boudreau. So that was hilarious. I feel like we're going to be that's going to be one of those clips where I'm going to watch that like 100 times just because it's just so funny. Bruce Boudreau has always been one of my favorite coaches. He's just such a great personality. To me, Boudreau is like reminds me of like my friend in high school's dad. Like he, I just get that vibe from Bruce Boudreau. Like he's just like he's got that fun loving personality, but he also has he can be you know strict when he needs to.
Yeah,
just like or your uncle, whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, that was one of the highlights of the draft for sure.
No question about it, right? And the draft and one of the funniest parts was that, as for me at least, was they took over the conversation. Like guys are getting drafted. And Bruce Boudreau and Kevin Owens are talking about wrestling. And you can just see that Jackie and EJ, they can't even get it back. Because it was just like, they were going on and on. And I'm like, this is the best thing ever. They've completely taken over the show. And they're just talking about like, just whatever. They're spitballing. And even after, I mean, it was hilarious because the broadcast kept showing them. And they were deep in conversation. It was like, yeah, if they need me, they'll come get me. But I'm talking to a wrestler and this is where I want to be right now. So. It was pretty funny. It was probably one of the better moments. Probably the best moment for me as, and I don't know about you, you know what the best moment for me was? How fast the draft went. It was like this. And I know that I saw someone on Twitter, I think said that they attributed kind of a lack of a lot of movement because the phones weren't working. And, you know, obviously with the network outage, that was causing issues. I mean, I don't really understand that because you think, although sometimes the Wi-Fi can be bad in there when you're, you know, because there's so many people drawing on it. But I mean, I don't know. It was there weren't a lot of moves being made. I mean, the Jets obviously didn't make any. I'm sure they were taking calls and making calls, and you're always taking calls and having conversations. And if you're not having conversations, you should be having conversations.
That'll never get old, will it?
No, never, ever. But the reality for me was that, yeah, I mean, look, there were definitely some teams that were making moves, right? The Oilers made some moves to get some cap space. The Leafs made some moves to open up a goaltending spot. I mean, teams are
Flyers, starting... right? We were talking about that off air, Dave.
Yeah. You know,
Tony D'Angelo, who, I mean, I don't like him personally just based on, you know, what he's done off the ice.
Yeah.
I don't think it's right. So I'll just say that. But I mean, the guy is a tremendous offensive defenseman. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Carolina, you know, they took the risk. It paid off. What did he have? 50 points? 60. I might have had closer to 60 points. I don't know, but Philadelphia, you got to like, you know, what they've done, right? They get Cutter Gauthier, fifth overall. I mean, he's a beast. Speaking of size, right?
Yeah.
And the type of player he was with the U.S. team. So, I mean, I like that move. I mean, I think, you know, his character off the ice is what he's done is pretty horrible. But maybe, you know, they look at it like giving the guy a second chance. And at the end of the day, hockey's a business, right? And they traded for him because they think he'll make them a better hockey team. But yeah, there's no doubt. Can we go back to the phone issue though for a second? Because you were texting me at one point. I'm sure people, hopefully, you know, nothing serious happened with, you know, people not being able to call 911 or anything like that. But for me, I don't know what it was like for other people on the Rogers Network. But if you were on Wi-Fi, you were okay. But I was getting messages, text messages, but I couldn't send any. So it was weird. Like, I was working yesterday, so a few times, like I had to send like messages on like Microsoft Teams, or like I had to send emails as texts because I couldn't respond. People were texting me and I couldn't send outgoing text messages. So obviously, you know, like everybody was inconvenienced by this, Dave. I'm no different than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a horrible situation. But yeah, you wonder if, you know, teams wanted to make trades, but, you know, they couldn't get their messages through yesterday. It's a very unprecedented situation. And that speaks to what, you know, Jimmy Toth was saying last hour, Dave. You know, it's weird free agency, right? Because we're always used to it being Canada Day, I guess, you know, in a normal year. But you got to think there's going to be some moves leading up to free agency and on July 13th. There's just too many big names out there, right? Like we've talked about Johnny Gaudreau, Vladimir Tarasenko, Blake Wheeler, throw in, you know, Jacob Chychrun. I mean, there's a lot of different names. I'm not mentioning all of them. JT Miller is another guy, right? This is a big year. I mean, this is a very big year, a lot of moving parts, and it's going to be very good for us. It's going to be very busy on the website. We're going to have a lot to talk about, you know, next Saturday. I mean, I don't think, you know, Wheeler, Dubois, and Dylan are all going to get moved, but you could have, you know, two of those three guys moved. I think even though Brendan Dylan, I think, is a great character guy, Dave, I think it just makes a lot of sense to, you know, move that contract, considering that you've got Ville Heinola and Dylan Sandberg on that left side. So we'll see what happens. I mean, it's a business. And even though I think a lot of Dylan was a very well-liked guy in that dressing room, just based on his personality and the fact that, you know, you'd step up with a big hit or a big fight. I think it's just a matter of, you know, having too many bodies on that left side.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think it's going to be, it may be so fascinating that we need to have a show on Wednesday night covering, you know, the free agency. So never say never, folks. We could always do an Illegal Curve pop-up if there is need. But as he says, if not, then we will be back with you on the 16th of July to talk about all moves the Jets made or didn't make, but most likely would have made. They'll also, guess what, folks? I'll get some Moose stuff because I suspect that after that, we're going to get some announcements on the Moose side of things in terms of players. You know, and Ezzy, one of the things, you know, the Jets are going to have to start to do, though, is tender their contracts to their RFAs. You know, like we've talked about, like I am surprised that certain guys haven't gotten signed already. And there's, now that you've gotten Rick Bonus out of the way and you've got your coaching staff, you know, a lot of these contracts are small, easy. We talked about it in past shows on the RFAs and who we think will be back. But I just think like it's just a surprise that, you know, that's a tidy, easy element of the business. The Pierre-Luc Dubois, that sort of thing is something that's not going to happen for a while. We don't expect, but you're right. I mean, look, we don't know what is going to look like on Wednesday on free agency. We do know one player for sure who's going to get an offer tendered to him, and that's Christian Vesalainen. Even though he's signed to play for Malmo net overseas in the Swedish Hockey League, he'll get a contract so the Jets can at least, or tendered a contract, so the Jets will be able to retain his rights and make. Some folks were asking, why would they do that? Of course, they do that because they want to be able to trade him as an asset. I mean, I guess in theory, they could retain him and he could come back and play. We know that's very unlikely. So the suspicion would be that you're going to be able to do that. So you can at least trade him. Of course, it could be like, who's the Russian that went back to Russia, played, what was his name again? It was Ivan Telligan. Jets, I think, still have Ivan Telligan's rights. And if I recall correctly, I once saw on Cap Friendly, I'm pretty sure they have the right still to one of these, like, Russians that the Atlanta Thrashers drafted in 2000. So the guy's like 43 years old, but the Jets still control his rights. I remember thinking to myself, is that actually
Boris Vlahovic?
Yeah, no, I'll look it up. But anyways, just going with the idea of free agency, Ezzy, what is your expectation? Like, I'm not asking you to say this is exactly, I'm not asking for a Ginsburg guarantee, but really how likely is it, do you think, that we see something happen with, you know, Blake Wheeler before Wednesday or on Wednesday?
Well, first off, the Ginsburg guarantee is more like an anti-guarantee. But I don't think anybody is expecting the Jets to sign a big-time free agent. I think it's the trade route. Is that what I'm looking at? And like I said, I mean, I could see, you know, a guy like Brendan Dillon being moved. I could obviously see Blake Wheeler being moved just because where there's smoke, there's fire, right? I think I'm less confident, or I think it's less likely that Pierre-Luc Dubois is moved. So again, just because I said that, it's probably going to be the opposite. Dubois is going to be traded and Dillon and Wheeler aren't going to be traded, right? But I think when you're talking about, we talked about Eric Comrie earlier, but I think, you know, Evgeny Svechnikov, Dave, I don't really have a good read on that because Svechnikov started out so well playing alongside Dubois and Connor, right? And then he kind of fell out of favor with Dave Lowry. So Svechnikov, I'm not really sure, is the KHL an option there? Is he going to sign with another team? But Jansen Harkins and Mason Appleton seem like much safer bets to be signed to shorter-term deals by the Jets. I just don't know, specifically when you talk about Harkins, where the fit is there. And just going back to Christian Vesalainen, I know, Dave, I'm getting a little bit away from free agency here. That sits well for me. I can't speak for you, but, I mean, the Jets gave Christian Vesalainen every opportunity. And you could say that, you know, should he have been given more power play time? I mean, I don't know if he earned that power play time. The Jets have so many other skilled players that deserve that power play time. If Nick Ehlers can't even get on the first power play unit, why did Vesalainen deserve second power play unit time? But all I'm saying is that I think it's probably best for the Jets and Vesalainen that he's going to play overseas. I just don't know if he fits in, Dave, right? Like, to me, Morgan Barron showed me more and earned more of a spot, for example, on a third line than Vesalainen did in the last couple of years. So just wanted to get that in there. I think Vesalainen is a kind of one of those prospects that just hasn't materialized. And like, do you want Vesalainen playing on your fourth line? I don't think so. And he wasn't really finding a niche on the third line. He's played too much pro hockey now to go back to the Moose. Like you invested too much into him to now just kind of have him play another year at the Moose. Like, what else can he accomplish at the AHL level? So just wanted to get that in there. I think that, you know, I think you just have to say, Dave, that was a first round pick that just didn't work out for the Jets. That's how I would kind of simplify it. So when it comes to free agency, like I would imagine Chevy is looking at, especially with, you know, some money freed up from having Paul Stastny out of the situation, out of the equation, I should say. Mm-hmm. I would assume that he's looking to augment, you know, the fourth line. And I know I saw some people in the chat talking about a guy like Nicolas Deslauriers, like a guy with some sandpaper. That's what I'm looking at. I mean, I haven't, you know, done a deep dive into, you know, what free agents are going to be available for the Jets on the fourth line. I've been talking about that for years. I would like to see more of a veteran kind of, more of an agitator kind of guy. And, you know, Zach Sanford, I think, you know, it looked like he might be an option there for a guy on the fourth line. But I mean, we know that that's not most likely going to happen. So those are the types of moves I could see the Jets making. But when it comes to, you know, the big moves, Blake Wheeler's got to be the big one. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to be talking about this, you know, in the days to come, unless he's traded. But it's really tough to figure out what the Jets are going to get for Wheeler, right? Do they have to retain salary? Are they going to look to get a winger in return? Are they going to look to get a prospect in return? Like, to me, you got to get a roster player back. I know people are saying, well, you know, maybe you get a draft pick and maybe you get a prospect, but you're still giving up a nearly point per game player, right, Dave?
Yeah.
So that's the big question right now. Is Wheeler going to be moved this week? And what are the Jets going to get back for him? Because I don't know if the Jets can trade him without retaining salary.
No,
maybe
I think
you're right. I don't know how many teams want to pay, you know, a 35-year-old who's a third-line winger $8 million a year.
Nobody is. I mean, the reality is that they'll pay it for $4 million, for $4.3 million maybe, if the Jets eat half. But there's no way that anybody's taking that contract. So, and Father, I did some research while you were talking, Ezzy. It was Ilya Nikulin. He's currently 40 years old, drafted in the second round back in 2000. He is currently on the Jets reserve list. So the Jets, if Ilya ever decides he wants to come back,
be on the reserve list. I mean, he's obviously never going to play for the Jets. I'd be curious to know why he's on that reserve list. Like, did they just forget to take him off? Like, it's like the movie Office Space, Dave. We fixed the glitch.
Yes, we forgot to tell you, but it's all been resolved. Anyways, yeah, I mean, I just thought that was, I remember doing some research once. I think it was actually on Nathan Smith. That's what I was doing. And actually, I have to give a shout out to Cap Friendly. They are an amazing resource, and they're really nice guys. Dom is one of the drivers behind it. And I actually had a question about Nathan Smith. I emailed him. He said, just give me a call because it's easier that way. And I talked to him for about 15, 20 minutes. There. Really nice. Really nice guys.
Think of how much that resource is utilized, Dave, by the hockey world. Right?
It's crazy.
Not just people in media, but fans. Like, I know a lot of either coworkers or friends that are constantly on Cap Friendly. Like, it's a vital resource. Like, it's one of those resources, like, you know, it used to be Cap Geek, right? But, you know, if there was no Cap Friendly, I believe there are a few other sites. There isn't any site.
Puckpedia is good. Yeah. Puckpedia is good because if you want to find out agents and stuff like that. But, yeah, no, there's no question that
everybody uses it. At least most people use it. It's just one of those resources that has become basically a must-have resource for hockey fans.
Well, and the crazy thing also is that it's updated like instantaneously. Like, you'll see a trade and I'll be like, I'm not joking. I saw a trade. I want to see something. So I went to I don't know if it was the Hawks or whatever, but I went to see what happened and he was already on this. I think it was like, let's say Kirby Dach. It wasn't, but all of a sudden he was already on Montreal. And I'm like, the trade just happened on Twitter, like 5 seconds. And I know these guys.
I really like that trade for Montreal, by the way.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a great trade.
21 years old. I mean, you know, people are looking at Kirby Dach. What was he, third overall, I think?
Why are the Jets not trying to get Kirby Dach?
Yeah, I mean, I remember we had Mitch Love, who was he's a coach in the AHL now.
That's right.
I forget which team he's coaching, but remember Mitch Love was the head coach of the Saskatoon Blades. We had him on a few times because he was also a World Juniors coach. I remember talking to him about Kirby Dach. Like, he's 21 years old, and now, the Habs had to move Alex Romanov, and then they had to then make the trade the first-round pick for Kirby Dach, but...
Mm-hmm.
I like the potential there. I mean, whether he's a second line center or third line center, the guy's big and has a great shot and great offensive capabilities, right? So I just thought that was a really smart move. I think the Canadians were big winners. And you always hear that, right, Dave, that, you know, when a team is hosting the draft in their city, that they kind of have to hit that home run. And even though a lot of Habs fans thought or wanted Shane Wright, I think Juraj Slafkovský, you have a 6'4", 200-plus-pound winger that could, you know, score 30-plus goals at the NHL level. I think Habs fans will forget about Shane Wright very quickly.
Well, hey, because maybe a lot of Habs fans are thinking in 2 years they're going to have a guy named Pierre-Luc Dubois on their roster. Who knows, Ezzy? Who knows? I mean, but you know what? What
Suzuki,
you know,
Dubois and Doc up the middle? Sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, seriously. And you know, if you're Montreal, and what do we talk about? You always want to build around center strength. Well, that's something the Jets had, right? The Jets could have had if they would have gone Scheifele, Dubois, Stastny, and Lowry, something that, you know, yours truly has been talking about for a long, long time. But, of course, that's not what we ended up seeing. And now there are lots of questions. By next week's show, Ezzy, by next Saturday's show, we will have less questions and hopefully more answers.
Do you not agree? Or we might just have more questions.
We could have more questions. That's absolutely the case. And let's hope that's not the case, though, of course. And
I'm going to go on the record here. I think.
Oh, hold on. We need a bell. We need, like, just like the Minute News Minute. We need, like, hold on, Ezzy, 1 second. I need Frosty Winnipeg to hit me with our sponsors because I don't have it queued up. So I need Frosty Winnipeg, do me a little favor and send me.
We need a comment.
I need that comment.
That's what we need. Yeah. We need a comment with musical notes.
The show's
notes.
Already rolling over. I need Frosty Winnipeg to send me that. So as you finish, you go here, give your Ginsburg guarantee.
I believe my prediction is that Blake Wheeler and Brendan Dillon will be traded within the next week. That's my prediction.
Interesting. Okay. Well, we will see.
As far as what happens. The Jets get back for either of those players, I mean, your guess is as good as mine. Probably draft picks or a draft pick for Brendan Dillon. But for Blake Wheeler, I mean, it all depends, right? Because he's got the no movement clause or the what's it called, protected list. He can control where he goes.
But I mean, that's my
prediction. Right now, Wheeler and Dillon get traded.
Yeah, and right now Wheeler
won't happen, but that's what I predict.
Wheeler had to submit a 5-team list that he was willing to go to. But from the sounds of it, if there's a 6th, 7th team that expresses interest, that's one that's not on his initial list, but he's interested in going to. Sounds like that would be he'd be willing to deviate, if you will, and make an adjustment in his thing. Well, I think that's it for today's show, and we appreciate everybody joining us. It's been a wild and crazy few days on illegalcurve.com, your source for all the latest Jets, Moose, and Manitoba hockey-related news. We have all your Jets draft-related content on illegalcurve.com, whether it's the interviews with the prospects, whether it's the interviews with Kevin Cheveldayoff, whether it's an interview with Mark Hillier, the director of amateur scouting. We have absolutely everything that you're going to need to find out about those guys that the Jets were drafted, the 7 players the Jets drafted. And Ezzy, what a difference, right? Last year, the Jets only had 4 picks. So it was a lot different of a draft.
I like it a lot better when they have 7 picks, let me tell you.
I think Mike McIntyre said they had 8 total in the last 2 years. So to add 7 players into that prospect pool, that is going to go a long way to augmenting things and ensuring that, you know, this Jets team is viable for years to come in the draft and develop model, which for some reason has become a dirty word. Regardless, we want to thank everyone of you for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Smash that like button before you head out and enjoy your Saturday. Make sure you're hitting that subscribe button because that always helps us. We always want to make sure our algorithms are tight. Who thought you'd have to do math in when you're talking about hockey, but algorithms are important. So drop a comment, not necessarily right here in the live chat, which we like, but maybe on the video itself or any of our videos. We appreciate that. I try and respond to every single one. But I just want to say thanks to all of our listeners. And, of course, thanks to all of our sponsors, Bernstein's Deli, Zapia, Grid Park, Linden Market Dental, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Seagram's. As he helped me out if I'm forgetting anybody. I'm for sure forgetting someone. Because
Betway.
Betway. Who else? I'm missing somebody. Oh, Rolly's Moving and Transfer Moving. Anyone else? Okay, I think I hit all of our sponsors.
I think you got all of them, David.
I think I got them all. But, you know, there are a lot, which we appreciate. And by the way, if anybody else wants to become a sponsor, hit up me, IC Dave. Give me an email, dave@illegalcurve.com. We're always happy to have new people jump aboard and help spread the word. And hopefully, usually when Drew's hosting, we won't forget. Or if Frosty Winnipeg in the chat supplying the name so I don't necessarily forget. But we appreciate everyone joining us this Saturday. This has been the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I am Dave Minuke. He is Ezra Ginsburg. He's going to get out into the lake and lack the Bonnie. I'm going to go enjoy the rest of my game.
I'm going to go jump in the water. I'm in a sunroom here. That's where I'm broadcasting out at the cottage here. And I'm telling you right now, I'm going to jump in the water. Cannonball time, baby.
All right. Well, as he's going to go cannonball, I'm going to go, jump in my pond in the backyard, and we will join you all again. Remember, complete free agency coverage on illegalcurve.com. We could potentially do a pop-up show Wednesday night if, of course, anything crazy happens with the Winnipeg Jets. And if not, stay tuned for more Illegal Curve Hockey next Saturday, 9 o'clock. Your place to be every Saturday morning so you can hear myself, Ezra Ginsberg, Drew Mandel, talking about the Winnipeg Jets, Manitoba Moose, and sometimes just hockey in general in Manitoba. Thanks very much, everyone, for joining us. Have a great Saturday. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.